time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. It's going to be a wonderful day. Actually, it's going to be a very nice weekend to get outside and do some things around the house. And the weather's looking mild for the upcoming week. So there's a lot on our plate that we're going to cover this morning. I'm Tony Wirtz, your host of In and Around the House with Ernie Brown. Ernie's out this morning. As a matter of fact, he's on special assignment. And we're going to keep that one for later. We'll tell you what's going on there. And we're fortunate enough to have our good friend, Bob Bard. Bob's joining us this morning here. He's on co-host the show with me in lieu of Ernie, in Ernie's absence. And Bob's from Bard's Nursery, and he's been in here with us before. He's got a lot of information to share with us. And by the way, good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. And how are you guys doing today? And let's say good morning to everybody out there listening.
So. And Radio Land. Not a lot of people are up this early, you know. They'll get up gradually as the morning progresses on, but... every Saturday, that's what Ernie and I we get to look forward to.
It's amazing how, you know, you come in and there's not a whole lot of people out there on the road just yet, but there are a few. I mean, the city starts waking up pretty early. I noticed a few businesses and things like that on my way in that were already opened, you know, and people were moving. And, you know, it used to be years and years and years ago on Saturdays, everybody got to sleep in a little bit. I think those days are long gone.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. It's been a long time since I've really slept in on a Saturday. At least 16 years.
Oh, at least.
17, maybe. That's when I was in the corporate world. Just that Monday through Friday cushy job.
Well, and
home at 4:30 every day.
How many years on this show now? Because it's been a while since we've done this several times.
Actually, we started spring of 2011.
There you go.
So, We're completing five and starting into our sixth.
That's
spring.
Incredible. Just
it
incredible.
Is.
I mean, I remember when you started and, you know, coming in and talking to you right away. I think I was in, you know, the first two or three weeks and, you know, we were talking home and garden show stuff or we were
That's
talking
right.
something. So,
you know,
and
what?
I remember
right.
it was a really, really neat time and exciting time to be there with you. And I'm glad that I could still be here.
I as well. You have a good memory. Sure. But that's hard to believe. Time has flown by. And so is the season, as a matter of fact. You know, it's fall. We have some warm temperatures out there this this weekend, which allows us to do some things that perhaps some of us are a little bit behind on. But, you know, and going into next week, it's going to be relatively warm. And then Friday.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to sit some 40-degree temperatures coming up here soon, which, you know, we're getting late in the season, and that's going to be frost has not happened yet. We haven't even been close to a frost, really. And, you know, it'd be nice to kind of have one. Knock some of those ragweed down for those who have allergies and some other things. And, you know, I'm ready to see fall get here. It's slowly starting. You're starting to see a few of the trees turn. And, you know, I noticed I was driving through Independence, Kentucky the other day, and some of the pear trees were starting to turn already. And, you know, some of the maples that are a little bit dry are turning a little bit now. But, you know, I'm ready for fall. I'm ready. This summer.
It was brutal this summer, to say the least. And, you know, really, this summer, there were a lot of bizarre things that took place, especially with the high humidity levels that we were experiencing throughout the year. And I know you were as well as I. You know, people were coming in all the time and they were bringing in samples of their leaves, you know, the foliage on their shrubs and their trees, like what's going on. And, you know, a lot of times when you see things like that, don't get so alarmed about it, but it's environmental.
Yes, there's been a lot of problems where the answer is it's the environment,
right.
It's the rain. And, you know, as we go throughout today's show, we're going to talk about many of those different things, whether it was in the lawn, on the trees, on the shrubs. There were problems everywhere. The good news is that a lot of it's going to be fine. You know, the bad news is there's some of it that's not. And, you know, that's what we're here for, to answer those questions for people. Or maybe, hopefully, we can mention something that's going to help them out.
I'm with you. And a lot of times, it's just really, it boils down to just being patient.
Yes.
And letting Mother Nature take her course. And do not, and I repeat this, and I say this often, you know, do not try to do something heroic.
I agree.
When some of your plants are struggling, or your trees, people, the first thing they want to do is go to guns and just fertilize the living daylights out of things. And really, that's the worst thing you want to do. Actually, just let the tree run its course, or the shrub, or if it's a perennial. Sometimes, unfortunately, if it's an annual, you just got to chuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mine went about 3 weeks ago. The annuals were just so bad that finally I said I had enough and switched over to my mom's probably a little earlier than I wanted to. But with all the rain constantly beating down on things, that they just weren't looking very good. And, you know, I was pulling up to the house and I didn't enjoy it. So it was time to change. And I think a lot of people are in that boat right now. I mean, driving around this city, and I've seemed like I've been everywhere lately. You know, there's a lot of annuals that just look bad that usually are good at this time still. You know, you'll get a few more weeks out of them, but, you know, there's a lot looks bad, and now
you will.
Time
especially,
to change it.
You know, especially petunias. Petunias seem to come back into their glory later in the season when it cools down a little bit. I know we have some waves out in the front of our bed right there by the garden center, and they're stunning.
Now, did you trim those at all this year?
I didn't touch them. I didn't even look at them.
Did anybody in the garden center trim them?
No, wouldn't even look at them.
And they still came back good, huh?
They bounced right back.
Mine looked pretty rough this summer because we missed about a week due to all the activities we were in. And I did give them a haircut, and they came back okay. They came back pretty strong.
You know, after you give them a haircut, what are you using, like wall shears? I'm just kidding you. But
pretty much, whatever it takes. Weed eater, lawnmower, you know, whatever it takes and whatever's easiest.
What do you fertilize after you do that?
Oh, definitely.
What are you using?
I'm using the Jack's petunia feed.
Oh, I'm right with you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful stuff. You want to take something and get it to bounce back, especially when they're calibricoas, the million bells or petunias. You can't beat Jack's Classic.
You cannot.
Petunias.
You cannot beat it. There's two of the Jack's that I truly love. The one is just the 20-20-20 standard general fertilizer. So if those are doing any annuals and you do a liquid feed like Miracle-Gro, some of the other ones that are commonly known, you need to look at Jack's.
Oh,
you need to look at it. It's a fantastic fertilizer.
I didn't know you sold that, but, you know, I swear by it. Especially the one, you know, the petunia feed has a really nice source of iron with it.
Mm-hmm.
Low in phosphorus, which kind of throws things off and makes you think, like, why is that?
Right.
But, you know, they're junkies. They love that stuff.
It is. It's almost a drug to them. It's that good. It's just created for them. You know, I'll use them on the Calibricoa.
Right.
I will use them on the petunias. The color, you'll notice instantly that you get great green color. You get better growth. The flowers are more vibrant. It's just a better fertilizer. Now, how often are you doing it to yours?
Well, the ones out front, not touched them.
Yeah.
You know, they look great. However, at home, in our window boxes, I'm using the Jack's Classic Petunia Feed. I use that on a lot of stuff. In addition to, you know, it's after the, you know, I like to use Osmocote.
Right.
You know, especially, we grow a lot of stuff on our deck in containers and window boxes. And actually, things are still looking relatively well. I mean, Tina, my wife, is very diligent about taking care of things. And
unlike you.
Yeah, unlike me. And, you know, this year we went a lot with, you know, some of the Lantana varieties. But to answer your question, you know, after the Osmocote starts to wear a little bit, we'll turn around and we'll start using the Jack's Classic.
Yeah.
At
home we were using it about once a week on ours to really do the baskets and do the containers just to get that extra growth and that extra color. You know, and Jack's makes that little hose-in container, which makes it fairly easy if you don't want to mix a whole lot yourself. So, you know, you just hook it to the hose and give it a spray.
Right.
So,
no, that's awesome. I didn't know you sold Jack's, one of my favorites, so keep that in mind. And as we're talking about fertilizers, I'm here with Bob Bard this morning. He's co-hosting the show with myself, and you're with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about fertilization, but we're going to take it to the lawn. And we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And I tell you what, folks, if you're just getting up and joining us, you're in store for a beautiful day. It's going to be quite warm. We might even touch 80. I know that this time of year, I like to wear shorts and long sleeve shirts, and I'm starting to feel a little warm in here. I don't know why it gets hot here in the studio sometimes, but Bob, you look relatively comfortable over there.
Hey, it feels great in here. I'm excited. You know, I'm usually not up this early. I mean, this is something for, I'm not a 5 o'clock guy usually, so.
It's not bad.
I guess you'll get used to it.
It's a good way to start the day off. So, and if you want to keep up with us here at In and Around the House, you can certainly do that by jumping out there on our Facebook page. Send us a message if you have any questions. And you can also send us an email to inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And if you want to check a past show for whatever reason, and you don't always get the opportunity to listen to us on Saturdays, you can catch us on a podcast. So certainly do that. And if you have any questions for us this morning, give us a call here at 749-B105. I'm with Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. Bob's a great guy. We had a good time the other day golfing, as a matter of fact, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on because we had fun, and I was all over the place, but we'll touch base on that. But we're talking about fertilization, and as we're talking about fertilizing annuals, what else is important too, Bob, is our lawn. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's people that stay with it. There's people that sometimes forget about it. And we're here to remind you about it. The fall is the best time to get into the Fertiloom three-step program. And the fall also is the most important time that you can feed your lawn. And, I love the Fertiloom product, and it does a great job, and my lawn's looking really good. So are a lot of other people who are on the Fertiloom three-step program. And we're getting close. You need to get that down.
Yeah, step two needs to come down pretty quick. Now, I will say, when it's time to fertilize, I bring some home for my neighbors as well, because they love the program, and they're like, hey, when you bring yours home, bring mine home. Well, I brought everybody else's home. They borrowed my spreader. They put theirs down. Mine's still in the garage. I didn't quite get to it when I needed to. Their yards are gorgeous, green, lush. They're mowing more often than I am. Mine still looks like a little bit dormant summer grass. It's not as good as it should be. It's amazing how good that step two is. But, you know, you need to get it down because we're getting to late stage, and I'd really like to see people get two fertilization applications in, because I do believe that final step is one of the most important there is.
Oh, definitely, because you get so much root development and so forth and during the winter months, and you need, you know, I say this too, you want to try and get at least 6 weeks in between those two fall applications,
yes.
If at all possible. There's no doubt about it.
And that's okay right now. You're still at that stage, because getting it around Thanksgiving or just after is not going to hurt anything.
Right.
And what you're going to find is, last year especially, we were looking at some of my neighbors who are on the program and those who aren't. Our yards who are on the program were still green in January, and everybody else's was already to winter. I mean, they were dormant. They were not pretty green. It was absolutely amazing, and I can testify without a doubt by watching it last year how good that product is.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, the beauty of it is, and it's a known fact, university studies have proven that you get quicker spring green up, just like you mentioned. But at the same token, as you're going through the fall season and the winter months, and if it's relatively mild, you know, the ground's not quite frozen yet.
Correct.
So there's a lot of activity, although it's not up on top. It's underneath the soil surface. And those roots, they're building up those energy reserves with a lot of carbohydrates and sugars, and they're storing all that to help them get through the winter months. And then, bing, you know, as soon as it warms up in the spring, you got it.
Well, and it's already a green. So if you're starting with green in the spring, and then you put the first step down with the prodiamine, you know, it doesn't have as much nitrogen, so it's not going to give it quite as green up, but it's going to last a little longer because it's a slower release. You know, you're already going to have it green. So it's going to be fantastic. And I cannot stress, and I always tell people at the garden center, if you forget anything, don't forget the last two steps.
Oh, I
agree. More important than anything.
I totally agree. And, you know, here's the other element, too. A lot of people will come into the garden center, or sometimes we'll get calls here on the show that, hey, I've been doing this program, and I'm still having some issues. You know, when you're relatively new into the program, you're going to hit some bumps in the road. But you have to have a lawn first before you can really take care of a healthy lawn.
I think that's the key right there. And that's something you and I even spoke about when we were playing golf the other day. You know, your lawn is really thick and nice, and we were talking about how you don't have a lot of weed issues because of that. So the program is fantastic. However, you know, weeds are tenacious. They are aggressive. They will find any spot. I mean, you can see weeds growing in concrete parking lots through cracks. I mean, weeds will grow anywhere. So the best defense is still a thick lawn. So if you don't have a thick lawn, start the program. Start working on it. Get some grass seed down. Get the lawn thicker, but still start the program. It may take a little bit to get it going, but you definitely got to start it.
I'm with you. It's not the magic bullet. So you don't fertilize and all of a sudden you have a lawn. You have to have a lawn, then fertilize.
Right.
And that's really the key. But the two fall fertilizations, as Bob and I are describing, are the most important, and you really, really need to get in on it. And, you know, when we were out on the course the other day, we were talking about some of the weed issues.
Oh, wow. I mean, they've been everywhere.
Yes.
And you know, even at our houses, you know, I don't live very far from you. I have tremendous amount of weeds this year. The nutsedge at my house was unbelievable. The ground ivy, I couldn't believe how much ground ivy was growing in the back where I really didn't pay that much attention. And then clover. I had a ton of clover, you know, and I was just shocked. Now, I'll be honest with you. We were just talking about a thick lawn. Last summer, mine, especially on the one side where every kid played the game Pickle. We all know Pickle.
Oh, good old Pickle.
Oh,
I'm with you.
And there was about a 50-foot span from base to base that was just trampled. And I've got a lot of weeds there because there wasn't a lot of thick grass this year. So,
right.
And I'm fighting that.
You know, and that also, where they play pickle, could lead to a little soil compaction, too.
Oh, I'm sure there's massive soil compaction. I mean, around here, we're in Cincinnati, between the clay, the rock, and just how hard everything is, and it's bad.
Oh, I know. And, you know, that was a good old game. And that would kind of, you know, whenever you would play baseball or not hold ball and you get somebody into a rundown, it brought that whole pickle game to
It actually was great to see play. All the kids in the neighborhood, because you had a bunch of different ages. The older kids were kind of, you know, being the guys tagging everybody out. Everybody was running. It was one of the few times I didn't mind the lawn was getting beat up.
Yeah. No, but since you're talking about the guys playing pickle there on the side of the lawn, that kind of comes into play with the newsletter for this week. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, if you have some soil compaction issues, you might want to consider aerating your lawn if you've yet to ever do that. Give us a call here at 749-B105. I'm Tony Works with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys. And again, Bob from Barr's Nursery is joining us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about aeration and the importance of doing so. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up and joining us this morning, good morning. And we have Bob Bard filling in for Ernie's absence this morning. And we're talking about some things in the front lawn, maybe the side lawn, the backyard, where we're starting to push the envelope when it comes to sowing seed. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. We got a lot of ground to cover this morning because, you know, we have Karen Sackstetter. She's going to be joining us around 8 o'clock this morning to talk about some fall decorations and decor, both inside and outside. And be sure to hang out with us here, too, in a little while, around the 7 o'clock hour. Bob and I are going to talk about some of our favorite ornamental grasses because they're really starting to come into their glory at the moment. And we're going to talk about some of our favorite fall shrubs when it comes to color and some trees as well. And before we went into the break there, Bob, we were starting to talk about, you were discussing the kids playing pickle in the side of the yard, which was a fun game. Takes me back to my childhood, most definitely.
Absolutely.
And then we got to talk a little bit. I thought, you know what? That's that situation where you might have a little bit of soil compaction. And that kind of comes into play with the topic for this week, too. Aeration. How important do you think that is for people's lawns?
Well, I think it's definitely something everybody should be considering. I haven't bought into that it needs to be done every year. But I do believe, kind of like a little dethatching as well. It needs to be done every once in a while. And a good core aerating is important. Now, right now, the ground's pretty hard. So unless you can get a good plug, it may not do very much.
Oh, that's important. And, you know, we got a little bit of rain the other day. I don't know how much you got.
Not much. Not even enough to get the car wet under it when it rained, yes. It
seemed like we had a little bit. In addition to that, I'm bringing this up because core aeration really has a lot to do with how moist the lawn is when you do it, because you want really nice plugs to be pulled up and ejected from the core aerator.
I agree.
And, when you start experiencing some situations with poor soil conditions, that leads to a lot of things. Limited growth with the turf.
Yep.
A lot of times weed problems, most definitely weed issues.
And that's what I had this year, just going back to where the kids played pickle. You know, they had worn the grass down. The soil was pretty compact.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't easy for the grass to recover very quickly. And so that's why I had so many extra weeds there. And it wasn't anybody's fault. It was what it was. And the weeds were bad. I mean, the nutsedge took over pretty easily. That's where my clover was pretty bad.
And that's when you're most vulnerable, too. You mm-hmm. know, when you start having sparse areas in the lawn or those areas that are compacted, weeds love those areas, and they take advantage of those situations, and all of a sudden, they're right there.
So when you aerate, how deep of a plug do you like to have? What would you be looking for if you were
advising? I'm looking to pull out a 2 inches or so, yeah. You know, whatever that is. It might even be 2.5, mm-hmm. but, you know, pulling those plugs out is very important. And also, don't feel compelled to rake those plugs up, because it's so important to just allow those to break down.
Yeah. Yeah, just let them go and but it's got to be a good plug. I mean, that's the key. Right. If you're only going about a quarter inch because the ground's so hard, it's really not going to do anything.
Right.
You got to pull a good plug. And I think that's the most important. So if you're going to aerate this weekend and we haven't had a lot of moisture, it might be wise to go ahead and put the sprinkler on the lawn just for a short time, don't get it so wet you're compacting the soil while walking on it and you're running the machine over it. So it is a, you know, it is a fine line, but a little moisture might make it easier and give you a good plug.
I agree with you. Hold on to that thought, because we have Richard with us this morning. Good morning, Richard. How are you? Hello, Richard. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just heading back to Columbus to pick up another load to go back to Honda.
Oh, okay. So you called us before, haven't you?
I've called the radio station several times.
Yeah. No, so what do you got going on? What's bothering you?
Well, it's not so much bothering me. I've got a knockout road that I planted for my wife early this spring. Well, it's beautiful. I mean, the thing's huge.
Mm-hmm.
When's a good time to cut that back, or what do I need to do this winter for?
You know, Richard, I like to cut back rose bushes late winter, early spring, and, you know, sometime around the beginning of March. Given that the weather's permissible, that it will allow you to get after and do some of that kind of work. The same with ornamental grasses, too. But, you know, keeping them pruned back annually, I think, is a huge benefit. They're, for lack of a better term, I think they're better behaved. It also allows you a lot of control with, you know, just keeping that knockout rose in, you know, in perspective. Also, at that same time, I would also encourage you to use a systemic drench. Fertiloom does a really good job with their tree and shrub drench. And that will help keep a lot of the insect activity off of your shrub and looking healthy and nice. And make sure you fertilize it monthly. Rose bushes are heavy feeders throughout the growing season.
Yeah, I think we've fed it like 4 or 5 times this year so far.
Yeah. And, you know, now you're going to start backing, you know, I want you to back off your fertilization now at this point in time, because we want things to kind of just slowly go into that dormancy stage.
Okay.
And the other thing I want to point out to you, and when you get a moment, is to go out and Google rosette disease. And that is a disease that's been, you know, plaguing some rose bushes, some knockouts throughout the tri-state area. I just want you to be familiar with that disease, what it looks like, and if it ever, you know, starts to become an issue for you, you need to remove the shrub. But just so you know what you're dealing with, it's a disease that is vectored via little mite from the wild floribunda rose, and you'll see all this really distorted, gnarly growth that's not normal on the rose bush. Bob, do you see a lot of that?
The rose rosette disease,
yeah.
Yes. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of it. Now, I think a lot of the rose rosette disease is coming because there are so many roses being sold.
I agree.
So you're just seeing the disease because there's a lot of them. But we're not seeing it on every plant, but it's just something you should keep your eye out for.
Okay, appreciate it.
And one last tip. I don't know if you have more than one rose, but I would certainly always make it a practice to just sanitize your pruners. Once you finish pruning one of your rose bushes, sanitize your pruners with like rubbing alcohol or one part bleach to 9 parts water before you go to the next shrub.
Okay.
And, you know, then you're preventing that way of vectoring that disease.
Okay, I'll,
you know.
That's on my way then.
All right, Richard, have a great weekend. Thanks, buddy.
You too, thanks.
Yeah, that's always a good question. And, you know, the old school, the old way of taking care of rose bushes and putting them to bed before the winter months was to prune them back in the fall.
Right.
And we found out that you still get that dieback element from
right.
where that pruning cut, you know, ends up, and versus doing it the following season.
Now, did you put leaves on everything as well?
You know,
on the old roses?
Yeah, you would shred up leaves and you would take it up over the crown or
yep.
up over the, you know, it would depend. You know, a lot of the rose bushes were grafted.
Mm-hmm.
Some still are. They're grafted onto a Dr. Huey rose. And what's really important when you plant those rose bushes is to take that you know, plant them right at ground level with that graft.
Sure. Very important. And a lot of people would go ahead and bury those old-fashioned roses
mm-hmm.
and then pull it off in the spring. Problem was, though, if you didn't pull it off soon enough in the spring, it was really bad for the plant. So, you know, they'd leave it there too long. So I love the new knockouts, how we don't have to really do anything to them.
They're nice. And so are the drifts. I like the drifts a lot, too. And I struggle with them because I don't think they always look their best in the nursery in a container versus once they're in the ground and they go through that first winter.
I agree. That is a plant where, you know, and typically you buy plants at the nursery, they look better. You take them home, they might have a little decline or something
mm-hmm.
along those lines. the drift rose is, I agree with you, it looks better once it's in the ground, gets a little established, and then the color is amazing. And this year, actually, I think there were less problems with those than there were with the knockouts.
You know what? I agree with you. I think this year was a great year for the drifts, and they did really, really, really well. But keep that in mind. We'll talk a little bit more about drift roses as we come out of the break. I'm Tony Wirsch with Ernie Brown. Ernie's out on special assignment, your local home and gardening guys. And again, Bob Bart's with us this morning from Bart's Nursery, joining us and co-hosting the show. And if you have any questions for us, you know, feel free to give us a call at 749-B105. And we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And it's going to be a beautiful day. As a matter of fact, it's going to be a very nice weekend. And we're starting to see, again, we're getting above some of the normal temperatures that we typically see this time of year. And if you're just getting up and joining us, good morning. We have Bob Bart in here. He's co-hosting the show with me this morning, and we're covering a lot of ground. And we also have some great information for you here just shortly as we start to talk about some of our favorite ornamental grasses. They're starting to come into their glory. And we're going to talk about some of our favorite shrubs as well that gives you some beautiful fall color, and some small trees that will give you some nice fall color amongst some larger varieties as well. And we have Ann with us from Butler County. Good morning, Ann. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on in Butler County?
Well, I have a very invasive fern. It has a woody root. I have tried to dig it out, kill it. No matter what I do, I can't get rid of it.
What have you sprayed thus far?
I have actually used Stinger.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. You used what? I'm sorry.
It's called Stinger.
Stinger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've done everything. I've dug down 2 feet into my soil, the soil to get the roots out. And it just keeps coming back.
Wow. One thing is, Bob and I were just talking about this during the break. I've never had an issue getting rid of any ferns. Bob, have you?
No, nothing quite like she's explaining. She has something crazy going on out there. So,
it is crazy.
How big of an area is the fern taking up?
It's on the south side of my house. It's in the south flower bed, which is, the house is let's see, 20 feet long and 6 feet wide.
Wow. That's a big area.
Yeah.
When you sprayed the Stinger, did it do anything to the foliage, or did it just laugh at it?
It laughed at it.
No, you didn't get any dieback or anything?
No.
Wow.
I mean, and early in the spring, I go out and I try just to keep popping them and thinking maybe it will die down, but it doesn't.
What's another ingredient that's, or another trade name for Stinger?
I don't think that's glyphosate.
No.
I think that's something else. So, have you ever tried just basic Roundup? Have you tried that just to see what the glyphosate would do?
I had it because I'm afraid, because I had a tree penny in that area too. And with the Roundup, I'm afraid because the Stinger, I just pop them and stick it on each one of them.
Yeah.
I pop it, you know, and dab it.
Yes. Okay, so you're just wiping it on, basically, or just dabbing it on.
That's a good idea.
It is a great idea.
I would do the same thing, and actually what else I might try is something that has triclopyr in it. Turf lime ester, I think that might be effective. Mm-hmm. And, a higher concentrated amount of glyphosate, something around the 41% range with Kilzol. And keep this in mind, too. I like Kilzol better than I do Roundup, and it's for this reason. It's a higher concentrated amount for the most part than what most people are familiar with when they buy the Roundup.
Correct.
The one with the red lid.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing Roundup, if you want a high concentrated amount of glyphosate, look for the purple cap.
Okay.
And I would probably try using it straight up. But I would do a couple of things here, Anne. I would continue, a little bit of elbow grease pulling, and as things start to, push through the soil, through the ground, and try to come back up and rear its ugly face, be right on it. You need to be diligent about your approach and stay with it. And follow up with us, because I want you to try something with triclopyr in it as well.
I think there's a Fertilome. Is it the brush and stump killer that has that in it?
Yeah, triclopyr is in a brush and stump killer.
Yeah, so there's a couple products that, somebody, your local garden center, independent garden center who carries Fertilome and High Yield should have any one of those, if not all three of those products. And you should be able to find it pretty easily. And when you dab it on, make sure you still get plenty on there. We're not looking to drip, all over your other things, or, where maybe you can you don't want to spray, and that's what you're doing, which is a great thing. But you may have to make sure you get plenty of product on the leaf surface in order for it to work.
Should it be directly on the leaf, or,
yes,
you know, cut it and then do it,
no,
on the stalk?
On the leaves, and don't cut it, because the,
okay,
more surface that you have to put the product on, the more effective that it is.
Okay.
Is some of that there now?
Right now, it's back to 2 feet tall again.
I think right now is an ideal time to go after it, especially because as things start to translocate downward and it starts to store its energy as we go into the winter months, you're going to be a lot more effective as well.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you know what, Ann? Please follow up with us and let us know. Shoot us a photo of that stuff on Facebook if you get an opportunity.
Oh, you know, it's one of those ferns you wouldn't even give your worst enemy.
Wow. I've never talked to anybody ever that has experienced such an issue as you with ferns, because I've always thought they were relatively easy to get rid of.
Mm-mm. All right. I will show you that. I'll send you a picture of them.
All right, Ann. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You know, following up, just one thing that I always like to mention, for when somebody's spraying some of the weed killers or total vegetation killers, you know, something in their garden and they're worried about spraying around good plants,
mm-hmm,
you know, a good big piece of cardboard,
right,
is fantastic. You just,
right,
basically create a shield from the good plants. So, you know, and if there's something she really wanted to protect, she could take some cardboard or something along those lines and really protect what she's spraying or wiping on. You know, just leave that cardboard there for 2 or 3 hours while that product dries.
Right.
And once the product dries, pull the cardboard away, and she should be fine.
Should
so that's
be
just
fine.
A trick that somebody or anybody out there can
I've
used it.
That's a great tip. Along with, too, she said she was wiping it on.
Yeah.
You know, when you do that, that's a great approach as well. Then you're not getting anything else on your other desirables, but make sure you wear really good protective gloves and,
yep,
you don't get that stuff on your skin or,
right,
perhaps get it in your eyes or...
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one other thing that she had mentioned, and I get so many questions, and I bet you do too. Should I spray the glyphosate or the Kilzol on the dirt, or do I remove the weeds and then spray? So people think a lot of times, and I get this a lot, where they'll remove the weeds and then spray the ground, and that does nothing. You have to get good leaf contact or good surface contact from the weed control.
I agree with you. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back in a moment. I'm Tony Wirsch with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys. If you have a question, give us a call, 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just joining us this morning, good morning. If you want to catch up with us or stay in touch with us, you can certainly do that on Facebook. And if you have any questions, you can send us a question on Facebook. We'll get back with you, that's for sure. And you can also send us any questions on our email account at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And if you want to catch a past show, check us out on our podcast as well. And today's weather, it's going to be really nice. So it's going to be a wonderful day to get out and do something in and around your house, especially outside. And for some of you who are a little bit behind the curve, so to speak, and you need to still fertilize your lawn, today might be a good day to do it. Make sure you get out to your local home or to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up the Fertilume three-step program, because the fall is the best time to get into it. And Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is joining us this morning. He's co-hosting the show with me this morning in Ernie's absence. And Bob will also be with me next week. And we'll have some even more information to share with you when it comes to gardening and so forth. And we've been covering a little bit of ground things, especially this morning with the lawn. We've talked about you know, the fertilization. We've talked a little bit about aeration. And, you know, we were on that subject, how important that is. Now's a good time to do it throughout the month of October. And we also want to touch a little bit on sowing grass seed, because it is the 15th of October. And, Bob, what did your grandfather always tell you?
My grandfather always said, if you don't sow your grass by October 15th, you won't get it up, and it will not grow. So I will say I have sown grass seed as late as October 26th, and it has grown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was an Indian summer through the month of October and November, and I believe even that year I was selling Christmas trees in T-shirts because it was,
you know,
maybe 60, 70 degrees.
I might remember that year because we had Christmas trees on the lot, and I turned on the hose and was watering those bad Oscars, mm-hmm, to keep them fresh as,
yep,
best I could. We've had some really mild Novembers in the past, and just like you said, sometimes if you sow seed, middle of October or later, you might get away with it, and you might not. And the thing that you really need to take into consideration, when do we start seeing our first frost?
Correct.
Third week, fourth week of October.
We're close. And looking at the temperatures out on the 15-day forecast, now, there again, you know, anything can change because it does daily in Cincinnati. But when it comes to weather, but you can sow it, but you're taking your chances. At this point, it is really late. If you want to guarantee yourself you're going to have a perfectly green lawn, mm-hmm. you may want to consider sod from this point out, because seed, even if you get it to grow, it's not going to be full and thick and lush. It's just pretty late in the season. You'll get some growth, but it's just not going to be lush.
You know, and here's the other point. Give it a shot. If you have some areas you want to repair or need to repair, if you're trying to do a total lawn renovation, I would probably postpone it. But if there's some areas that are troubling you and you want to work on it, you only have to gain at this point. But as long as you understand what could happen, because it takes, 10, 14 days for seed to typically start to germinate.
And if it gets real cold, it could be 21.
Right. And, you know, it could really knock it back. And what doesn't really fill into your satisfaction, come back and winter seed, you know, sometime throughout the month of February.
Well, and you know, we're going to have a warmer week this week. That's a plus when it comes to growing grass seed as far as keeping ground temperatures up. Because usually this time of year, you know, 40 degrees at night, mm-hmm. you know, we start getting frost, the ground temperature's dropping, all the things that would keep the seed from germinating. But we are going to be 85 degrees, according to what I'm looking at, you know, maybe middle of the week.
That's what I saw.
And if you would prepare your soil, you would get your seed down, and you're using a high-quality seed. Don't get a cheap seed. You get a cheap seed, you're going to get what you pay for.
Cheap results.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
You're going to get it. So, and seed's not that much more expensive. Like, you know, I know at our store, you can get a top-quality seed for the same price you can buy a cheap seed at a box store. You know, so why not buy the good seed? And the good seed's going to grow. And if it would happen to stay warm, you'll be amazed. I bet you mow it once or twice still.
I think we can get away with it. You know, and you said something. What is Indian summer? Give me a definition of Indian summer.
That's a hot fall.
It's a hot fall. Or does it continue on longer than normal?
Definitely. So something like, you know, I just remember October's. It's been so warm where I almost wish I still had the pool open. You know, where sometimes I'm out and, you know, just my shorts, right. Working in the yard, getting a sunburn. And that, you know, we're on the 15th. I've also seen snow this early in October.
I've seen it around Halloween.
Oh, definitely.
You know what? We're not far from Halloween either. We need to talk about pumpkins next week, if not this week. But, I mean, time is flying by. So we're putting some emphasis on, if you're going to sow grass seed, you better take it upon yourself to get it down today. Get out there to your local home and your garden centers, your local nursery. Support the local businesses. Pick up some grass seed, give it a whirl, and you have nothing but to gain as long as you understand where we are in the grand scheme of things, time-wise.
Yeah, I agree. And the key is also watering. You know, you're going to have to keep it moist. A good rule of thumb that I like to use is I'll water every day for the first week,
mm-hmm.
every other day for the second week, every third day for the third week, and so on and so on. And I'll even do that through the spring going into summer, and then stick with it once a week through the summer because you don't want to lose it over the summer. But, you know, this time of year, typically we're getting moisture. We're dry. We could use a little bit of rain.
We need a little bit of moisture.
And we haven't had it lately to where it's been enough to do anything. We had a little bit of light rain the other day. I really think it was less than an eighth of an inch at the nursery. I mean, it was a very, very small amount. Not even literally under the trucks, the gravel was still dry. So that's how little.
It's not enough. No. It's certainly not enough.
You know, and people ask, how much do we put on? You know, you want it moist, but you don't want to be able to have it sloppy.
Right. You don't want it sloppy. You know, something else that's important, too, especially right now when we're in the fall season, refrain from putting too much straw over top of what you sow. Mm-hmm. I want you to be able to look through that straw and see some soil. That's so important.
I agree. And that's where also, you know, it goes down to the very beginning of just about everything we do in anything. A good foundation is important. So prepare your soil, rake it down, get it loose, get something for the seed to take down.
You need that soil to seed contact.
Exactly. Not just sitting on top of hard clay. If you throw it on top of hard clay, you run the sprinkler, you're really not going to get anything. You have to prepare the soil. And if you do that, then the seed will get down into the soil quickly. So the birds won't get it as quickly. Success will be higher. And then another rule that I really like to do is make sure I seed a little bit outside. Like, say I'm working on about a 3-foot circle in the middle of the yard.
Mm-hmm.
I'll seed maybe another foot and a half outside that circle. I know I'm going to waste a little bit of that grass seed because it's just not going to take. But, you know, for those few spots where it's a little bit thinner, and it typically is, then it kind of fills those spots.
That's a good idea. And then it kind of makes, you know, a lot of people, you don't always get the right turf or the exact turf that you have currently. So that helps that blend in a little bit better.
A lot quicker. And then the key is try to stick with the same turf. You don't have to use necessarily the same exact, you know, brand. So you don't have to, as long as you're using good turf fescues, most of those blend pretty close. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but what you're not going to want to mix in is a Kentucky 31 grass seed with a turf fescue or, you know, you don't want to mix different types of seeds like that. So do a little educate yourself a little bit before you go in if possible. If not, that's where your independent garden centers, you know, a lot of us will have custom blends or we get details on what blends we have. We're going to understand what you need so we can make sure you have a good lawn.
Right.
And we're invested in you as much as you are in just getting your lawn. Because if we do a great job, you're going to just come back and buy more.
We want you to be successful.
We want, yes. Because,
yeah, absolutely.
And we want to help you get there. One, to save money. Two, we want you coming back. You know, so as long as we're taking care of those things for you, you know, your independent garden centers care for you as much as you do.
We're passionate about what we do.
Right.
That's what's really important. It's not just a job. We like what we do. That's what's most important there. You know, and you said something a moment ago, and we just had a call from Jane in Dayton, as a matter of fact. That's nice that we reached that far north. And
part of your 1 million listeners.
There you go.
Yeah.
And growing, by the way.
I know.
Just like seed. And you mentioned good and bad seed. What's really important here, and chime in anytime, Bob, is that everybody who's legitimate that sells grass seed, read the label, because there's a lot of filler in the cheap seed.
Absolutely. And it's not hard to find if you know what you're looking for. So really, it's usually on the front, but typically you'll find on the front on some of the box store ones, but on our seed, everything's on the back label, and it will tell you directly how much weed seed is in that bag.
Right.
And there should be almost zero.
It should almost be zero. You're right on. And also the germination ratio.
Yes. It'll give you percentages.
Exactly.
Of exactly how much seed in that bag will germinate. You're never going to get 100% seed. It's just not going to happen. But there are differences. So, you know, some seeds will only germinate at a 50-60%. Why put that down? You're just wasting 40-50%. You're just throwing your money away. Yeah, you got a deal. Well, there's a reason you got a deal. So, you know, go ahead and get a high quality seed. Get something that's going to test 80-90%. And then that way you're not wasting nearly as much.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you know what? If you don't use all of your seed this season, rest assured, you know, just keep it in a dry place, store it that way. And next year, you know, it's still relatively good. It's viable. All you do is just lose a little bit of percentage points there.
Well, and we turn our seed over pretty quickly. So,
right.
You know, I don't carry over a lot.
Right.
You know, people ask me how long it'll last. And I always say 2 years is a good rule of thumb from when you'll see on the label, it'll have a date, you know, from the manufactured date.
Will be a sell-by date. And if that sell-by date has expired, we've passed that date, you better call somebody out on it because they need to have that seed recertified.
Yeah, because, I mean, once again, we care. We don't want to put seed in your yard that you're not going to get a high percentage because you're not going to come back and buy more. So, like, you know, our seed, I almost bring it in, you know, in the spring, it seems like weekly. In the fall, it seems like weekly. In the summer, yeah, it might sit. But, you know, you're only looking at seed that still is going to be good for years because it's fresh, it's new, you know.
Well, hold that thought, Bobby, because we can talk a lot more about seed here, and we'll do that when we come out of the break. I'm Tony Wirtz with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys. And if you have a question for us this morning, give us a call here at 749-B105. We have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House, and good morning. If you're just getting up and joining us, welcome. And you're going to be in for a very, very nice day today. We're going to probably almost push or touch 80, which is a little bit warmer than normal. But, hey, we'll take it because I'm sure we're not too far away from some of those cooler temperatures, which come with the fall season as we approach winter as well. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning, and Ernie is out, and Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is co-hosting the show with me this morning, and we've covered a lot of ground, and we have a lot more to talk about. And next week, Bob will be joining me as well, so if you have any questions for us, certainly feel free to call. It's 749-B105. And speaking of callers, we have our good friend Denny, the Birdman, with us this morning on the line. Denny, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How about you guys?
Doing all right.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
We're doing fantastic this morning.
Yeah, well, I'm the bird guy. I tell people when to take care of their hummingbirds and things like that. And I'm calling in this morning to tell you all you can take your hummingbird feeders down. I think they've left us for the year.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I like the fact that you keep us right in tune with their arrivals and the departures. So, take them on down, and what else you need to do? Clean them up?
Yeah, you clean them up and set them up for, put them away for till next year and stuff like that, and then you'll start all over again around April. So, but I also like to tell people, if you got regular bird feeders and stuff like that, to keep them clean and keep them full.
You know, Denny,
everybody likes seeds, so.
Oh, yeah. And, I have a question for you. This is funny. A customer came in the store the other day, and, do you have any droll Yankee bird feeders?
No, I don't.
No? Okay. Well, droll Yankee is supposed to be a top of the line, and they do a really good job with bird feeders, amongst other companies that, manufacture bird feeders.
Yeah.
But he was telling me about the squirrel issues and how they just gnawed on these metal perches.
Uh-huh.
And just have chewed the living daylights out of it. Isn't it amazing what they can do with those sharp teeth?
I'm telling you, that they're just like mice. They got to constantly chew, otherwise those teeth will keep growing.
Incredible. I don't know. But do you have any solutions for us or any tips on how to keep the squirrels off the feeders, or do you even try to?
Well, I try a few things every now and then, but they always seem to work their way around them or whatever. But that's the reason why I don't really go for the real expensive feeders and things like that.
Right.
Because I got so many squirrels out here sometimes during the summer and stuff, they just, I just get the cheap ones and just replace them.
Right. What about your seed mixture? Do you spend a little bit of money on seed?
No, I don't. I spend money on black oil sunflower seed because all the birds like it.
Right. Yeah, you can't go wrong with the black oil seed. And that's really very nutritional and it supplies a lot of energy to this guy, especially through the winter months.
Yeah, and during the winter months, I go to the high energy suet, the beef fat suet and stuff like that. So it gives them a little more energy and stuff like that in the wintertime. And then in the summertime, I go to that no melt donut stuff.
So. Oh, yeah, the no melt. But I'm like, I'm kind of like the birch. I'm going for those high energy drinks, but not the suet. Ernie would eat a suet cake.
I'm always for the donuts. I'll go with any donut. I love the donuts. But that's not what we're talking about, but I still love the donuts. Had to throw that in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love the donuts too, Bob. But, you got to stay away from them too. It's too many. So
I agree, but those Krispy Kremes that are hot and fresh, you just can't get enough of them sometimes.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing like a hot glazed donut, I'll tell you.
I agree. Well, Denny, always good to talk with you. Thanks for the update and what's going on with the Hummers, that they're gone and departed. And stay in touch with us about some of our other feathered friends as we approach the cold months.
Yeah, well, most of them are headed south already and stuff like that. They've gotten smart and, head to the warm weather, so.
Got it.
But, we'll put up the feeders through the winter and stuff like that and keep an eye on them and let you know what's going on.
That sounds good. You stay in touch. Enjoy your weekend, bud.
You do the same. Have a good one.
You too. Bye. Always good to hear from Denny, the bird man.
I agree. He had a lot of good things there. Donuts, heading south for the winter. I'm all for all of that.
You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. I mean, I wish I didn't have, the fall season.
Well, let's go out
through there,
fill the tank up, and go south.
Maybe we can go play another round again, because Tony and I, we were going to talk about this, but Tony and I played a round the other day together with
Brian Schlemmer and a friend of his, Greg Small.
Yep, and it was a great time. So, but Tony and I definitely spent a lot of time near the water. That's something we need to mention. There was a couple holes, and for those who are our age or a little older have seen the movie Tin Cup, when he's at the end of the movie and he constantly hits the ball over and over into the water and he asks for another one and then he hits that one into the water. That was Tony and I on a couple holes. So,
literally, it was a par three surrounded by water to the right. And we both kind of a little bit of a slice and got in trouble in the water. Then we went down to the drop area.
We did drop.
And we each hit two more balls in the water, and I'm going to let it go as that. We got in a cart and waited on the other two.
The other two, we let them finish and shoot par, and we took a high score. So it was really, we got our money's worth that day, too.
It was
we
good
really
time.
Did get
you
our
had
worth.
That Mickelson swing. That's what I liked about it.
So, it was absolutely fantastic, especially the one good ball I hit. We each had a good ball or two, but while we were out on the course, and I know a lot of people were having these problems. Do you remember all the moles that we saw?
Oh, you weren't kidding. I don't know what it is about moles this year. Well, the one head is way on the green, if we can get our producer to put that up for us here in a moment or two.
Yeah,
and put it on Facebook. But this dude just really did up the green.
He did. You could see his path right. He was going right for the hole. I mean, he wanted to go home.
You got a photograph of me next to him, and I just had to point to him and ask him, you know, what are you doing?
Well, and you know, I know a lot of people are having problems with moles, and I was kind of surprised. We saw them going through the sand traps.
Going
through the greens. We saw them going through the fairways, the rough. I mean, I know a lot of people are having these issues, and, you know, where we've been working, I don't know about you, we've seen some grubs. I'm kind of surprised.
Do you think that, you know, now, again, just because you have mole activity doesn't necessarily mean you have grubs.
Right.
You probably, most of us do to a degree, but also, you know, it might be a good indication that you have a lot of earthworms as well.
Right.
But I'm like you, I've seen a lot of grubs recently. In the last two seasons, it's really surfacing late in the year, usually, you know, September, October, when people start to, like, pull their hair out and wonder, what's going on with my lawn? It was so nice just a month ago, and now you just pull it back, peel it back, and they're seeing all these grubs.
Well, and they are, and I've been planting trees at some in northern Kentucky. We've been kind of all over, and I'm seeing grubs. I mean, I'm physically seeing them for myself. They're active. They're moving. And you know they're eating some of the roots of the grass. You just know they are. So, you know, and typically you got to do a pre-treatment. Typically we are pre-treating those. And sometime between, you know, right in that early summer through summer treatments is what we got to do to try to prevent as much of that.
And that's when you can use GrubX.
Right.
And you can put a grub-free zone. You can put that down. Usually they'll say like sometime in, you know, late April, sometime in May.
It says all the way through July, I believe. So it's somewhere between April through July, I think is what the bag says.
Right, and the thing of it is, the female, she's starting to lay her eggs in June.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've had some wet Junes the last couple of years. We've had enough rainfall that the ground was just soft enough for the female, for her to get in there and lay a lot of eggs.
Must have been, because I'm noticing they seem to be much more active later in the season, but I'm seeing a lot of them. And, mm-hmm. and honestly, in years past, I haven't seen a whole lot.
No, I agree. And, you know, I've had this discussion one time with Bart, you mm-hmm. know, over at Burger. We were talking about it. And, you know, some of the guys were saying, hey, I'm not seeing a lot of it. But I have. Mm-hmm. But like you said, years past, not as much.
Mm-hmm.
But the preventative approach definitely takes place, as you stated.
Right.
I agree with you. You know, late April up into June.
Mm-hmm.
And, right now, I still think we can go after them from a curative standpoint, and that's using any product that contains Dilox.
Yeah.
And that will kill those. Once you apply the Dilox, you have to water it in thoroughly, and it will kill them within 24 hours or so.
Yeah, and I think the key there was water. You know, you have to water it in. If you just throw it on top of the ground and let it sit there, it's not going to do anything.
And the thing of it is, too, as we get towards the cooler part of the season, later into the fall season, what typically starts to take place, if you're not going to go after them right away or today or this week, when would be a good time to do it, they start to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a little bit more difficult to go after them.
Right, so, and then you'll be attacking them next year.
That's right.
Yeah, and for the most part, damage is probably done. They're not going to do a ton more. We're having some warmer temperatures, so they'll still stay a little more active. But I think as soon as the cold starts happening, you know, we'll be okay. So if you don't have a lot of damage, I wouldn't worry too much about it. And we're not trying to cause a panic or anything. We're just trying to.
Oh, yeah, we are. We're
just jump on it. But,
yeah,
you know, we want to make sure that, you know, people realize they're out there. You know, and typically in years we haven't had them. And I can honestly say I have not seen them until this year for multiple years. But I've seen a lot of them. And so I'm, you know, trying to prepare people for next year, too.
That's a fact. We're going to take a quick break. When we come out of the break, Bob and I are going to talk about some of the ornamental grasses that you're seeing coming into their own right now. They're starting to they're showing those nice plumes and those seed heads. And I think it's something that we've not talked about often in the past enough, but ornamental grasses are a favorite amongst everybody out there. Give us a call here at 749-B105. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk ornamental grasses, and we're also going to talk more about some shrubs with beautiful fall color and some trees that give you that fall burst of color as well. Give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back.
Good
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And Ernie's out on special assignment, so we have Bob Bard in here co-hosting with me this morning. And it's always a pleasure to have Bob with us and joining us on the show. A wealth of knowledge. Great guys over there at Bard's Nursery, as a matter of fact. And Bob, what's going on over at your nursery, by the way?
You know, this is such an exciting time. We love fall because, and we've been saying it for years, and I think people are starting to really understand, fall is for planting. Mm-hmm. And it is a great time to plant your trees and shrubs. If you are in need of lower maintenance when it comes to watering and taking care of plants and trees and shrubs, this is your time. Because you can put things in. It's a lot easier. There's not as much maintenance to do. Things will be shutting down soon. You know, there's still incredible plants. We stay open year-round. So we keep our stock pretty high because we do so much landscaping. That, you know, when we're out on a job and I run out of, you know, a globe blue spruce and I need one more, I don't want to wait 2 or 3 weeks or even till spring and then go back and plant it. So we keep a stock year round. So if you're still looking for plants, I know we still stock quite a few. So we're excited about that. And it's mom season.
It's mom season.
You want color? Those annuals are tired. You know, get to your mums. I mean, we've still got some that are just opening their buds. We've got some that are out pretty full. You know, and put some mums in and pansies and, you know, some of the ornamental grasses, which we're going to touch on now. Yeah. I mean, I really last year kind of started growing some new ones. And just to lead into this segment, you know, one of my new favorites is and it's not new, but it's new for me, is the blackhead penicetum, the blackhead fountain grass. The ones that get the black plume on them.
Maldry? Ooh,
yeah, love it.
Oh, and you know what? That's stunning. That's on my list here, as a matter of fact. I love the penicetums. And if you're wondering what the penicetums look like, they're the ones that have like the little cattail plumes.
Yeah, the dwarf fountain grass is what most people know it as. And it's a 2 to 3 foot tall grass. And, you know, there's different varieties of those penicetums. But the dwarf fountain is probably one we sell the most of. And I absolutely love it. I mean, the plume starts a little earlier than some of the other grasses.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big one. It's not invasive. It doesn't have to be split very often.
No.
It's a good grass.
Well-behaved. You know, Hamlin is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. too. I love Hamlin. Well-behaved, nice stature to it. And the penicetums that we're talking about, usually they'll start showing their plumes or blooms maybe late July going into the early part of the fall season. If we could take Penicetum rubrum, that is the red fountain grass that so many of you are familiar with that you buy at the local garden centers and nurseries and use as a thriller in some of your combination pots. If we could only make that one hardy to our area, I think we could retire.
Oh, it would be absolutely fantastic.
We would be millionaires.
And just to explain, that is the burgundy, purple, plumish grass that you'll see in the spring. It will not survive the winter. And it does tremendous color. The plumes are really early on that as well. They're very mm-hmm. soft, very, very, very soft looking plume. Beautiful color. If you could get that color year round, you know, because barberry is what we have. And, you know, barberry is the burgundy color we have. We have mm-hmm. some heucheras, you know, but that burgundy color is always something we're striving to get extra of. And that grass would do it. But unfortunately, it's not going to survive the winter.
No. And, you know, another little dwarf version of the Penicetum family is Little Bunny.
Yeah, Little Bunny.
Yeah, that's a
it's
nice
a
one to consider.
It's a cute grass.
Yeah, it's
about
18 cute.
Inches.
I like that, Bob.
It's a cute grass is what it is. And for two guys to say that, you can visualize what that one looks like. But, you know, the only issue, honestly, I've ever had with the Little Bunny is I don't think it's quite as hardy as some of the other ones.
And sometimes they'll have a tendency to dry out a little.
They dry out.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It just depends. You almost have to really be up with it. Along with, like, another one, Festuca.
Yeah.
Elijah Blue, mm-hmm. for example.
And if it's too wet for Elijah Blue, that's that real pretty blue dwarf one. You know, if you get a wet area, that's not the one to choose, for sure.
No, not at all. All right, take me into the Miscanthus world.
You know,
give me a favorite there.
I still love the general Grasillimus, you know, Miscanthus Grasillimus. It's the maiden grass, you know, probably 6 feet tall, probably with the plume. It does multiply, so it doesn't spread, but it does multiply fairly rapidly. So, you know, every 4 or 5 years, I like to dig it up, split it, put a small piece back in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's probably one of the most common grasses that you see around here.
Yeah.
I think it's the most popular.
Yeah, Grasillimus is a great one. And, you know, I like it, too, because it waves in the wind. It's nice and wispy. It's upright, well-behaved, holds its stature.
You know, as a designer, and I know a lot of designers are like me, you know, we don't like just traditional plants all the time. You need some movement. in the landscape. You know, when the wind's blowing a little bit, those grasses give you that movement. I had a lady in the other day that was buying some ornamental grasses for her cat because she the cat loved to watch, you know, the plumes in the movement. And,
interesting.
You know, and it was very, it's very much true. And if you're looking for an accent piece, you know, your ornamental grasses offer so much variety that you, if you can't find something that you like, then you're not looking.
I hear you. You know, one that I have that's out there in the front of my yard by the utility box is one called Morning Light.
Yeah, I love Morning Light.
I just took a photograph of it the other day because as I back out of the driveway, the sun, as it's coming up on the, you know, the east side, it just it penetrates those seed heads just right. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
and, you know, hence the name, Morning Light, there it is.
Yeah, and it gives you a beautiful plume. It's beautiful foliage. You know, once again, that's another ornamental grass that multiplies but doesn't spread. And I think that's the key on some of these grasses. A lot of people don't like the maintenance because when you do have to dig it up and you do have to split them, it is a lot of work. I mean, it really is.
It can be.
You know, if you put it in the right spot, you give everything the right spacing. And I think that's the key. You have to realize what these grasses are going to turn into. Because like the Miscanthus Morning Light at the Garden Center or the any of the ornamental grasses, when you buy these plants, you're buying a very small plant.
Right.
You know, you have to remember, and this is with any plant, when you're doing your design work or you're doing your installation, if you're going to do some this weekend, know what the plant's going to do. And you, and grasses are a good, you know, really
great example
of
it.
You have to know.
Give them the space. Keep that thought, Bob, because we're going to take another quick break. If you have a question for us, give us a call at 749-B105. And Tina from Finneytown will get to you as we come back out of the break, and we'll be right back. It makes me want to say, let's plant.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I love the bumper music around here. I'm always listening to B105 on the radio. So, you know, I love my country. You know, and I love Q102 right across the hallway there. I love the music, you know, but it's nice to hear some of this music. I don't know who does it.
It takes you back.
I love the
bumper
music.
We're getting ready to have a big meeting on some new bumper music. So if you have any requests, you better write them down.
Oh,
and then we'll try and work those
in. Bumper music's great.
Yeah, it's great. So we have Tina. Tina, thank you for hanging on from Finneytown. And what's going on in Finneytown, Tina?
Well, I have a limelight hydrangea tree at my other house, and I need to dig it up. And bring it to Finneytown.
Oh,
so it's a decent sized limelight hydrangea tree, and I really like it. And I need to know what I need to know so that I don't mess it up or hurt it or shock it when I go to try to bring it here.
Things like that, you know, especially. You know, with the summer that we've had and where we are temperature wise at the moment, you know, going, you know, as we're here in the fall season, still relatively warm. We've not had a lot of moisture. I would like to see you allow it to lose its foliage first before you lift it. And what you might do as well is go ahead and spade around it and just leave it put until it drops its foliage and then give it a good haircut. Bob has something else to share about this too, and this is an important question as well. Go ahead, Bob.
How long has that hydrangea been in its existing soil?
At least 3 years.
Okay, that's a great thing because typically, you know, you're moving at year one percentage is almost 100% typically. Year two, it drops, you know, a few percentages, same thing for year three. But once we hit year five, then you start getting into some trouble. Now, Tony had mentioned the root pruning. That's where you take a spade and you actually shove it into the ground as deep as you can, kind of around the tree, and you don't touch or move the tree just yet. And the reason we're going to do that is we want to cut the roots, but we don't want to put the tree in total shock. By going ahead and prying it, moving it, and hurting the roots any more than we have to. So when you do that, you also need to make sure there's plenty of moisture in the ground. So we haven't had that yet. You're moving it from one house to another. How much time do you have before you have to get this tree removed from the old house?
That's the issue. I have a week.
Okay.
Ooh.
You have a week, so that's not great, but we can work with that. So what you want to do is you want to actually go ahead and start watering that tree, possibly even today, tomorrow, you know, and do a little bit of the root pruning where you take a spade and cut it in and take it, cut the ground and cut the roots. And I would run that hose probably on a slight trinkle, maybe something coming out the size of your pinky for maybe 30 minutes or so and soak the ground around it.
Good deep drink.
Yep. Yeah. And then also you want to prune back some of the foliage. It should have some dead blooms on it at this point right now.
Right.
So I would go ahead and cut some of that back, even though you may lose a few of the flowers for next year, although it'll bloom on some old and new wood. But I'd go ahead and prune that back. And then by next week, hopefully it will cool down just a little bit, get through this next spell of the middle of the week. And then next weekend, you should have no problem moving that.
And get the area, the new site prepared so the transitioning goes quickly.
Okay. Is there anything maybe I should amend the soil with that's coming, you know, the spot that's being transplanted to?
It's a great question. I always like to have on deck and chime in anytime, Bob. You know, like any type of compost manure combination, some peat moss, maybe some soil pine fines. And what you want to do is when, you know, whatever size of that root ball is when you lift your hydrangea tree, dig your new location twice the width of that, not deep, wide, and make sure you don't plant it too deep. And the soil you dig out, I always like to look at that volume of soil and say, hey, I'm going to add about 25% of some other soil amendments and just go with it and mix it in. You want to use that existing soil where the new location is going to be because ultimately that is the soil that's going to grow in. Mm-hmm. And also a little tip, I love Espoma's Biotone as a like a root starter stimulator kind of thing, or you can also use Fertilum's root stimulator. Do not use anything high in nitrogen and try to gun it. You want to use something that's going to be more beneficial for root development as we go through the fall months.
Okay, so no high nitrogen.
Right.
Okay.
You don't want to encourage any new growth. What we want to use is something that encourages root development, like a root stimulator, or I like Espoma's Biotone. Okay?
And then one more important detail that definitely want to make. Once you move that tree, treat it like it's a brand new plant, and you really probably will be watering about once a week if it stays dry like this. And it's heavy watering less often. Don't go out every day and do a little bit every day. A lot of water, but less often will be great for that plant.
I water it a lot, about once a week.
Yep, that should do it.
All right,
keep us in the loop.
All right, thanks a lot.
You got it.
Good luck.
Bye, Tina. And we got to take another quick break. If you have any questions for us, give us a call at 749-B105. Tony and Ernie here, your local Hardin home and gardening guys. I'm sorry. And we have Bob Bard with us. And we got to take a quick break. And Debbie, when we come back out of the break, we'll get right to you. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up this morning, you're in store for a beautiful day. And as a matter of fact, a very nice weekend. And we may even touch and reach 80 degrees today, relatively on the warm side. But take it while we can get it, because I think next Friday we're going to dip down into the 60s. So that might be the precursor as to what we normally see temperature wise in our neck of the woods. And this morning we have Bob Bard with us here joining us and helping me co-host this show. And Bob always brings a wealth of knowledge here to the program. That's what this program is all about, is helping you, the homeowner, with things in and around your house. And with that said, we have to go to Debbie here in Madison Township. Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. What's happening in your neck of the woods?
I just got home from work. I'm hoping I don't drop you because I don't have a good signal.
Okay. Well, if you do, you just give us a call back, but go ahead. What can we help you with?
Okay. We're having an addition added on, and I have some plants that are in the way. I have two burning bushes and a butterfly bush and a couple hostas.
Okay. You just need to do a little transplanting?
Yeah, but I didn't know, like with the burning bushes.
Well, burning bushes are pretty tough, you know, and they're resilient. I wouldn't worry as much about the burning bush, and give me a moment here, Bob, because you can chime in anytime. And the hostas, too, go ahead, relocate. And if you're working on this project, get it done. The one thing that gets a little dicey here is your butterfly bush.
Yes, it does. I do have a question. How long have all these plants been in?
The burning bushes have been in there about 3 years. The hostas were here before we got here, and we've been here about 5.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The butterfly bush, I'm trying to remember if that's one I brought from my other house. No, it was here. And actually, it wasn't doing real good when we moved in, but was it last year? The husband cut it down, and this year it's taller than me.
So you may have to cut that one back again when you go to move it, you know, but I think your success will be pretty high. Key is make sure we have some moisture in the ground when you go to move these plants. Also understand you're probably going to see, if you're not already, your burning bush turning pretty red and going to fall pretty quickly. When you start to transplant any plant, tree, or shrub this time of year, you're going to see things just go dormant a little bit quicker than if you just left them in the ground. But I would go ahead and water everything, you know, pretty thoroughly so there's some moisture in the ground. You don't want it soupy, but you want some moisture. And then you should be able to just have a pretty easy time moving any of those plants. I mean, the burning bush are real easy.
Yeah, for the most part, they're resilient. Yeah, just lift as much of the root ball as you can. And just make the move and transition rather easy. Have the new locations prepped prior to lifting, and you should be okay. The only thing I have questions about is that butterfly bushes can be a little temperamental through the winter months here in our area.
Yeah,
and try and get as much of that root structure as you possibly can.
Well, and I think that's a good idea. Go ahead, Debbie.
Yeah, I've had good luck with my butterfly bushes in the other house. It grew up over my gutters. It got stupid.
Yeah. When you go to move your plants...
Do I need to trim?
Yeah, I would definitely trim. Yeah. Definitely trim all of them back a little bit. Trim your hostas back. But when you go to move, you're going to want to try to get as... And the burning bush. But you're going to want to get as much of your root ball and much soil around those roots as possible. So start... When you start to transplant a bush or a tree, start a little wider than you actually think you need to. You can always go ahead and take a little bit more soil or roots off when you go to move the plant. But if you start too close to the trunk and you cut the roots too shallow, you're going to have very low success. So start as wide as you can. Usually start almost as wide as the bush is typically. You know, start there and then work your way back in when you go to move the plants.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
I've got this really tall grass that was here. It's pretty. You know, it grows up and it hangs out. And it's been here so long that, like, the middle of it is bald.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm talking, these are probably, like, 2 foot diameter. They're pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to, like, when, they were so hard to get out of the ground, I had to use a saw ball to try to cut through the roots.
Oh, it could be tough. Yeah.
They're, like, one of them we took back by our barn and just sat it there, and we didn't put it in the ground. It's growing back there now. So, how small should I cut those back to, and do they always do that, or is it maybe just because of where these people put them?
Well, it's a miscanthus more than likely, and for example, I have one called Morning Light, and it's pretty typical to see them as they get older and they've been in the ground for a while, they start to develop this void in the center. And a real easy fix for that is division and taking a clump from the side of the plant and actually lifting it and putting it back into the middle. Make sure that the ground is adequately moist because just like you stated, very tough to divide those at times. And you'll dig in there and you might be using a sawzall or whatever, but it can certainly be done with success. I like to move and divide ornamental grasses just in the spring, as you start to see new growth starting to push. And there's some people that do it in the fall and get away with it, but I like to do it in the spring. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay, do you cut it down for the winter, or do you wait till the spring?
Well, I like to cut it back in the spring because the crown, I think when the grasses are intact, there's two things that come into play here. And one is, I think it adds an interest to the garden during the winter months, especially when you see a snowfall. As we progress through the winter. Secondly, I think there's another important factor that comes into play. When the grass is intact, I think it protects the crown of the grass. And, I just think it goes through the winter months a lot smoother and easier than it does when you cut them back. And a lot of people do. They cut them back on the golf courses, they burn them back. And they do that in the fall, and they have great success with it. But that is just my 2 cents worth. And again, I say this all the time. When we leave northern Kentucky or the Cincinnati area to go to Florida, you can go by train, plane, or automobile and different routes, but you'll still have the same success. So that's really your call. You can prune them back in the fall, or you can do it in the spring.
There's a gentleman up the road, probably got 30 of them, like a natural fence, and he cuts his and burns them.
Yeah.
And I saw that at the golf course over here. One other question. I have a hydrangea, like the other lady said, but it's been here more than 5.5 years, and it's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a bad spot. I'm not going to get into detail of where it is, but it gets mostly shade. A little bit of morning sun.
Do you know the variety?
It's really pretty. Multicolored.
Okay. Sounds like it might be a macrophylla. You know,
I have no idea.
You know, going back to something that Bob has, and Bob chime in anytime, something that Bob's brought to the table here, you know, something I've never really talked about or thought a lot about, which I should, is, you know, really the length of time it's been in the ground, not that you can't move anything at any given point in time, but that also has a lot to do with the success of things. There's no doubt about it. But in your situation, I like to move those late winter, early spring, some of the hydrangeas. It just varies on the variety, and it also varies on the location where you want to place them, too.
Right. You know,
I like to see them lose foliage where there's less stress. I also like to, as we were stating a moment ago, do a little bit of root pruning prior to the actual lifting part of moving that shrub, just to kind of get things off and started on the right track. But are you not getting bloom production, or is it just too big where it is?
No, I'm getting quite a lot of blooms. The foliage is beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to know about cutting it back because I've never had a hydrangea. My mom doesn't know about them. My man doesn't know about them. So we always trim them back. We try to trim them back in the winter, but there's been one or two times we haven't. But it still survived.
Did you say
it's gotten big?
Did you say my man? I got a kick out of that. Last time I heard that, somebody was scolding their spouse. But
we're not married.
Oh, okay. I got a kick out of that. I thought it was very, very funny.
So I either say husband or my man because I'm 50 years old and I'm too old to have a boyfriend. He's my man.
there you go. I like it. Funny. But, you know.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, on the hydrangeas, you can go ahead and trim some of those dead blooms off now. It won't hurt them at all. It sounds like yours is maybe newer than you might think. You may not know, but endless summer variety that blooms on old and new wood. So if you want to go ahead and give that a little bit of a haircut, that's not going to hurt anything. I would not be cutting it near the ground or, you know, doing any severe cutting on it. I would wait till spring on most of that, but, you know, anything that has some dead blooms, just go ahead and nip them off. It won't hurt anything to clean that shrub up.
All right, Debbie.
Spring, cut it back further.
Well, yeah. You'll wait and see what happens through the winter, and you're going to see what kind of dieback you get. And then, you know, give it a little bit of spring to wake up. You'll see some new growth coming out. You're going to leave that alone. But there is going to be some winter dieback, and you'll want to go ahead and take that off so that the shrub looks aesthetically more pleasing, and then it's better for the new growth to come through.
Thank you guys very much for your time.
All right. Have a good weekend. Keep us in the loop, all right? Yeah, always a good question. I wasn't sure if she was moving that shrub as well, but certainly it doesn't hurt to prune back some of those hydrangeas.
You know, and make sure I want to make it pretty clear to people. When we talk about, like, moving plants, the first thing I always ask is how long has the shrub been in? And the reason I do that is when I'm asking my clients, I want to say if it's year one, I mean, it's almost 100%. Year two, it's maybe dropping, you know, 5%. It's still 95% success. The success rate for an average homeowner after year five starts to diminish pretty quickly because they don't have the equipment or necessarily the knowledge. And I'm not trying to put anybody down, but they don't do it every day. You know, put me in charge of the accounting software program somewhere. You know, I'm not going to know what I'm doing, you know, but when it comes to plants, I do. So when you go to move things after year five, there's such a big root system. It's hard for homeowners to get that much soil unless they have a piece of equipment. So success drops to almost, for most homeowners, probably 50%, you know, and after that, you get to year 10, it's dropping even more. You know, you get somebody with a big tree spade that can move big trees. They can do that at the right time and they can move anything large. But most homeowners after year five, success starts to come pretty low.
Like it. All right, we got to take another quick break. Give us a call here at 749-B105. And when we come out of the break, Mitch, we're going to get to you and talk about some grass seed issues. And Ernie's on a special assignment this morning, so we're your home and gardening guys. And Bob's joining us from Barge Nursery. I'll get that out correctly. But if you have a question, give us a call. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up this morning and joining us, welcome. You're going to see a nice day. We're going to have a wonderful weekend, as a matter of fact, and a great weekend to do some things in and around your house. And also, if you have some little ones, I have to encourage you to take time out of your day today or tomorrow, perhaps, and go over to Burger Farms. They have this great big pumpkin patch party going on over there. Hay rides and all the fun stuff for the little ones to enjoy. So you certainly want to take that in. Burger Farms, great guys over there. And you're for sure to have a wonderful time with the little ones. And this morning, Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is joining me, co-hosting the show. In addition to that, he'll be joining me next week as we talk about some of the wonderful fall shrubs and trees and different things going on this time of year. And we've been kind of busy this morning with some phone calls and people asking about transplanting things and pruning some things back and so forth. And we've covered a lot of ground up to this point, haven't we, Bob?
We've done hopefully well, and hopefully we're educating some people and, you know, getting them the information they need and desire and
help you out.
Anytime there's things that they want us to talk about, you know, let us know.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Just bring it on. And with that said, we have Mitch with us this morning, and he has a grass seed question. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing okay. So what's going on with your lawn?
Okay, so about a year ago, we settled into our new home, and they put straw and grass seed down for our backyard, and it kind of grew and it kind of didn't, but now I have mostly weeds and bare spots. Mm-hmm. And my soil is hard as a rock because of the clay. So I'm trying to figure out what to do as far as laying grass seed, fertilizing, or anything to get this lawn to start for a good lawn next year.
Right. We can start in a number of areas here with your lawn. First and foremost, how much turf would you have percentage-wise versus what you have weed-wise?
I bet it's about a 60-40.
60-40. Okay. I think we can work with that. Going back with you just mentioned something about the turf being kind of hard and compacted, and when it's sparse, you'll see some of that. And one thing we were talking about this morning on the show is the importance of aeration and watering the ground enough, or making sure there's enough moisture in the ground to properly core aerate. I think that would be a good starting point for you.
Okay.
In addition to taking the opportunity to overseed, you know, as Bob was saying earlier in the show, Mitch, you know, his grandfather would always say, you know, you don't want to push it beyond the 15th of October to sow grass seed. And that is so true. And that is because the amount of days that it takes for seed to germinate, and as we get towards the end of October, we start to see those days or nights where we start to experience frost or hard freezes, which makes it a little bit difficult for new turf to get off to a good start. I certainly would take my chances, and what doesn't come in very well this fall, I would come back and reseed during the winter months, and that's during the month of February. So your work is definitely cut out for you. However, I would, you know, what's most important here as well is that you get the soil surface taken care of in such a way that it's nice and loose and the grading is there to where you want it to be or need for it to be, and you get that good soil-to-seed contact. And if you don't start there and get that soil-to-seed contact, it's not going to really work. So
okay.
Go ahead.
We're getting a fence put in within the next 4 weeks. Is that going to affect the growth of the grass? I mean, I know there's going to be people back there working on it. Am I kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you have some things to hurdle there. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of foot traffic, and if you think that would hinder or prohibit, you know, your success with turf, then let's put it off. Let's take care of what you need to take care of first, and then come back and address the turf issue. And, you know, you can certainly winter seed too, and during the month of February, the ground starts to heave. It opens up and closes during the freezing and thawing moments, you know, as those daytime temperatures get warmer and colder during the evening. That will pull the seed in, and it helps protect it. So when are they putting in the fence?
Within the next 4 weeks, they said.
Oh, within the next 4 weeks. Well, that could be 4 weeks from now, and you could try and sow some grass seed and get it up. I would put a little bit of rye in there, and Bob and I were talking about rye earlier. He likes to use 30%. I'm a little less, but rye is going to be one of those turfs or grass seed that's going to germinate quicker. Chime in, Bob.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm running away with it.
Are they going to just mainly do manual digging when they set the fence post, or are they going to bring in some heavy equipment?
They haven't really said. We're getting a Kentucky three board fence, so okay. It's not going to be anything.
No, there's not going to be any heavy equipment. So I would go ahead and get my grass down and take my chances. You're going to lose a little bit where they mat it from walking on it, especially if it's happened to be real wet at that time. You know, but I would go ahead and get the rest of the lawn. Seed is fairly economical, so, you know, even if you're buying, you know, a 50-pound bag of your best seed, you might be spending $100 or so. You know, I would go ahead and take my chances, put it down. You know, Tony and I talked about a little bit of rye, especially this year. The rye comes up a little bit quicker than the fescue, so if you put that in with some fescue, you'll get something growing and up and green. As warm as things are going to be this week and the ground temperature's pretty warm, I personally would take my chance, get some grass seed down. You could always, if you're real worried about it and the grass looks great, you could also get a few sheets of plywood, lay the plywood down for them to kind of do some of their heavy standing when they're auging the holes and things like that, and then pull the plywood up, and the grass will be a little matted, but it'll actually be okay from that point.
Okay. And should I go around with, like, a rake and pull up the dead straw that's left there from the builder?
Absolutely. Yes, most definitely, because you need that good soil to seed contact, and that's so important.
Okay.
And I would even use a starter fertilizer prior to you sowing the grass seed.
Absolutely. A little fertilizer would definitely help. But if you do not get the straw up, the seed's going to try to germinate in that straw mat, and then it's never going to root into the soil. And the very first dry spell that we have, it will be dead, and you will be starting over. So you have to rake that up. The seed has to be able to have something loose to take into. That's when he talks about surface contact with the seed. If you just throw seed on top of hard clay, it's not going to germinate. So take your rake, pull the straw up, maybe even mow the existing lawn down maybe another half inch lower than you normally do. And then that way you can get that seed down into that soil and really get it to take. And then I think you'll have good success with the weather we're going to have. So you're not going to get 100%, but it would definitely be worth doing.
Okay, so would it be a good idea to, like, water, fertilize, and then seed?
I like to put my, I always like to seed last. I don't think you have to water, but water would probably be the last step.
You do that, yeah.
But I would fertilize, and then I like to put the seed down second. The only reason I like to do that is I don't like to walk on my seed, and I don't like to break the seed. Because when you break it, you're not going to get it to germinate the way you want. So put the fertilizer down, prepare the soil first. So prepare first, fertilize second, seed third, and then you'll start your watering process.
Okay.
All right, Mitch. It's all on you, buddy.
Good luck.
All right.
Good luck.
I appreciate
Keep
it.
Keep us in the loop, all right? Let us know how it goes. Thanks.
Have a great day.
Great question.
We've had some great questions today. And this is something I love being on this show. And this is what I love about the show, and I love about your Facebook pages, and I love how this is a Cincinnati show. And I think that's what's great about this show. You know, you're talking to you and I. We live here. We have the same problems everybody else has. We have the same soils for the most part. I mean, there's some people down in down by the river that have some incredible soil.
Oh, tell me about it.
They're the lucky ones.
Dig the slightest hole, and whatever you put in there grows.
You know what? So, I mean, we understand the difficulties that people are going through because we're doing the same thing.
We've experienced it.
Yeah.
Hey, we're homeowners. Yeah. Trust us.
And we're consumers. You know, we understand the value of a good grass seed. We understand the value of a good plant. We understand all that. And I think that's what makes your independent garden centers such a great resource to use. And I want to continue to reiterate that, you know, we care.
That's where it starts, Bob.
If you go to the box store, you're not going to care.
That's where it starts.
Yeah. So, you know, anytime you have questions, that's why I love being on the show. And I love, you know, the friendship that you and I have and many other garden centers around, you know. We're here to help.
The camaraderie is there, and it's awesome, and it's priceless. You can't buy it. Keep that in mind, because we're going to take another quick break. If you have a question for myself and Bob, feel free to give us a call here at 749-B105. When we come back, we have a Facebook question from Tim Maston, and a really good one, as a matter of fact. He's having success with seed, and we'll tell you all about that when we come back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. And Ernie is on special assignment, so he's out this morning. And Bob's been so nice and gracious to join me and co-host the show from Bard's Nursery. And
bumper music again.
Yeah, you got to like it.
I love the bumper
music.
You need to
write down your request
list. I'm
going
to do that. And
we'll get Karen to do that as well. Karen Sackstetter is just nestling in here, getting ready to join us. We're going to talk about some fall decor and some different holiday things that you need to start considering and wanting and maybe perhaps wanting to do in your home. But before we do that real quick, we had a Facebook question from Tim Maston. And the question goes as follows. Hello. One of the questions for you guys is, I just sliced seed at my yard 2 weeks ago, and he's seen a lot of new growth. Would you recommend that he proceeds with the last step of the Fertilum three-step program in November, or do you have any other recommendations? The fact that you've also used the starter fertilizer is great. I would stay the course, get a couple mowings on it, and definitely the latter part of November, I would not be hesitant to put down the last of the fall fertilization.
Absolutely. Do it. You are right on schedule. You put your seed down a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I'm sure he's been doing a little watering. Wonderful to hear him doing everything right on time, right on stages. Everything's perfect. So hopefully he has the great results because he did everything right.
He's where he wants and needs to be.
Yes,
so,
he's done everything right. Timing was right. He should be getting ready to mow that seed probably in another week or two.
Yep.
You know, if he can stay off of it still for a little longer, that would be great, just to let that stuff get up a little higher and seed get up. And then, around Thanksgiving, put that fertilizer down, put that final step down, and he'll be ecstatic in the spring.
Tim, you're good to go. So thanks
great
for
job,
the Facebook
Tim.
Question. And good morning, Karen. We have Karen Sackstetter in with us this morning. She's always a burst of energy, and you brought this orange bengal boa. I like it. Is that what you want to call that?
I thought I kind of would like help you get in the season of color, but I'm sure that you already are, and I'm sure you also are with all your moms.
All the moms. We love it. I mean, oranges and the yellows and the reds, the harvest colors. I love them this time of year.
They are so pretty, and they're perfect for our city because of all our sports and the reds and the oranges and all
I'm
these
with
colors.
You.
Yes. And the blue of the blue skies, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was on our agenda the last time you were in the
right.
blues.
You know, add a little bit of blue to your fall colors because it's out there from our skies. The skies have been beautiful. I'm sure everyone has enjoyed all the colors. Last night it was beautiful. So with the reds, oranges, and all the blues.
I hear you. So what's going on at Sackstetter? So what have you been into? What's trending, and what are we doing for the fall season? Where have you been the busiest?
Well, you know, this is a big time of the year for Sackstetter's Interiors because when we look at the fall, we also look towards the holiday times. We call them all holidays. So it goes from Halloween to fall and then right into the Christmas. And so Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or Twinkle Twinkle Little Lights, they become everywhere. And you can use those throughout the whole October, November, and December season. So, you know, get them out and start using those just to lighten up your areas.
Like the fall lights? Is that what you're talking about? Like little...
Well, you know, you can use more with the fall tones if you would like to use the orange. But, you know, now, my goodness, it's dark almost by 7 o'clock. And so if you enjoy being outside, and of course we all love the campfires, but I was really good. I had no campfire last night.
So you were well behaved.
I was well behaved. Love the campfires. Going to be around one tonight. But, you know, if you don't have that opportunity, of course there's a lot of little tabletop campfire pieces that you can get. But, you know, the lights just kind of warm up the areas. And so, of course, I do a lot of decorating for people and for our stores in the interior of your homes. But then you guys do the exterior. And
it's a great time of year. I love the change of season. Last night really started to feel, to me, like fall. The cooler temperatures. Mm-hmm. You could smell everyone kind of having their fire.
I did it like four in the morning. I smelled someone's campfire. It woke me up. It kind of scared me.
It just makes me really enjoy fall. And I know for you, this is a fun time of year as well, just changing the season and all and everything with it. And it's just, for us, it's a great time of year. We love it.
Yeah.
We love the change of season. And I said it earlier in the show, I pulled my annuals out and put my mums in. It was a little earlier, but I actually still enjoy it. I love seeing the mums, and I see the color and the pansies, and I just love the outside decorations this time of year.
A burst of color, you know, and it really hasn't happened on our hillsides yet.
No, it's starting to. You're just seeing a smidge or a hint of the color change, and we're just a couple weeks away, and then it won't be long till you start seeing a lot of leaves dropping and that fall, that burst of color.
All of that. Yeah. Yeah.
And I like it. The trees, are some of them are falling early because it's dry.
Right.
There's some of that out there. But the early colors are just starting to show. In the next 2 weeks, you better all start paying attention. It's going to be pretty outside.
You know, it's kind of a fun thing to do with your family, especially if you have smaller children. Maybe get that calendar out and, you know, pay attention in the evening and you kind of sit down for that quiet time, maybe before homework or dinner, and just kind of look around and teach them to look up rather than just look down. And it's all about your horizons. And this is the time of year to pay attention.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're fast approaching Halloween, too. What a fun time and that spectacular kind of feeling and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, you know, okay, here's the question. On my way in this morning, this is the first time I have ever seen this, but I saw pink pumpkins for breast cancer awareness in someone's yard. They had about 10 of them. Have you seen any pink pumpkins?
No, I can't say that I have.
Say that I have.
Yeah, I'm sure they're painted, but of course.
I'm sure.
Yes.
We've done a lot of pink night lately. There's a lot of sports doing pink nights for, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see a lot of different things pink that you normally don't see, but I can't say I've ever seen a pumpkin.
I can't either, but hold that thought because we'll come right back to it after we take a quick break. If you have a call for us or Karen Sackstetter, feel free to give us a shout out at 749-B105. I'm Tony Wirsch with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and we have our special guest with us this morning. Well, we have two, actually. Bob Bard from Bard's Nurseries helping me co-host the show in Ernie's absence. And we also have one of our all-time favorites that comes in often and a burst of energy is Karen Sackstetter from Sackstetter's Interiors. And I can relate to all that fun stuff and changing things around indoors and so forth. And before we proceed on, Karen, give us a little bit of contact information from Sackstetter's and your website information.
Awesome. It's Sackstetter's Interiors, like a sack, S-A-C-K. And I've been in business for 28 years, all local. Here we are. We're going to enjoy our 2016 Christmas holiday fall season. And we are at the Brookville, Indiana exit off of 74. It's 11,000 square feet, and we are full, and it is pretty. And then over on Montgomery Road, kind of by Carlo and Johnny's, and it's a beautiful store. And just it's an exciting time of the year, just like with your garden centers, the outside, and we're the inside. And just would love for anyone to stop by.
And what are some of the things that you're doing this fall for clients? I mean, and tell us a little bit about what you do for homeowners. If they were to call you, do you work with what they have? In addition to, I'm sure you're bringing new things into the home. What are some of the trends and what are things decorating with? Or what are people decorating
with? Well, you know, one of the new taglines I love to use is we're never done decorating. Mm-hmm. And it's from the interior of your home to the exterior, to the clothing, to the earrings, whatever that you need to buy. I know you don't wear earrings, Tony, but
not yet.
But anyway, but we're never done decorating. We have that edge that we always want to know what's new, fun, exciting. Mm-hmm. You go back to color, you have primary colors. We spoke about that the last time. Off of that, what different blends of those colors does it create?
Right.
And so as far as I feel that red is still a very strong color for the holiday season, going from orange, of course, for Halloween into fall, for Thanksgiving and going into Christmas. But you can still blend all those colors together.
Right.
With a lot of different pumpkins and different things. I love all the white pumpkins, all the real white pumpkins and gourds. Those are beautiful, and using those as accents. Something I haven't seen as much as bittersweet. And
You're right.
Yeah. You know, I do all silk accessories. I have no dried products. You guys probably have more of the dries, but I haven't seen much bittersweet. My grandmother always went along the fence line and get the bittersweet.
And, you know, a lot of those fence lines have been depleted. You know, they're no longer in existence. And I agree with you. We used to have people just all the time bringing truckloads of bittersweet in, and what a wonderful item to decorate with. Really looks sharp with the white pumpkins if you can intertwine it around maybe like a grouping of white pumpkins that are stacked on, you know, like in
on a table, on a centerpiece.
In a centerpiece or right there at the front door in a couple of urns. It's a wonderful look.
You know, and I just think, you know, everybody's into that natural look as far as decorating in the interior of their home. Mm-hmm. But some of those elements, like you said, that are a natural product, I do think that's hard to find. Do you have very much of that at your...
We don't fool a lot with that stuff at our garden center because we really... lean more towards the landscaping of the outside. We don't fool as much with the inside stuff. But just going for a second, I am really impressed with what you've done with him in these many years that you've been on the show. Look at him decorating.
Well, wait a minute.
He is really growing.
Yeah,
right. That is amazing.
Yeah, I get a lot of flack from my buddies, too.
I am amazed that look at how much growth you've had.
That's why I've always been a chick magnet. I can relate to that stuff. I'm just kidding.
It must be. See, I thought it was the golf game.
No, it's not my golf game.
Well, now, talking about golf, so when you're out there golfing, everyone, I was at Miami Whitewater last night trying to hit a few balls. And, that's when I'm like, well, gosh, look at the leaves. They still haven't, changed much. So if you're out golfing, don't just pay attention to the ball as you're supposed to.
Look around
and enjoy. And look for those bunny rabbits. And, oh, boy, those squirrels have been so busy collecting all their nuts. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much fun. And then back to decorating, nuts are a really nice natural way to
decorate around your home.
Just
a lot of different things. Absolutely.
Right.
Real quick, don't you have an inside track to a golf pro?
A little.
We need some help.
Can you
get us into the lessons for the holidays?
It might take a while. He's not teaching me everything yet.
Okay. I just had to, with us, it
would take a very long while. I mean, it'd take a while to fix these.
I thought you had a connection for us.
Well, so. I think that it would be a great idea to have a little golf outing and everybody dress up a little bit for Halloween, but you get to start around 3:30.
There you go. You organize.
You might get kicked off the course.
You might.
Especially if you're dressed like a clown.
You need to get a picture.
You might get in trouble
if you're dressed like that.
We need to get a picture of Bob with this around.
Yes.
Hey, I would look good. I could wear that. It'll be on the Facebook page here for In and Around the House.
I brought one of my beautiful orange boas in.
Yeah, before I leave, we'll get a picture of that.
Did you hear that, John? Okay, we'll make that happen.
I'm manly enough. I can do that.
I know you can. Talking about fall decor, I know one of your favorite things is we're in the fall season, which is my favorite time of the year, and I think that you lean towards fall more than any other season, too. And if I'm incorrect, you can certainly let me know. But is the fall tree, with different fall components to that tree, and then you can switch gears and go into the holiday
season. Transform it.
So tell us a little bit about that. What do you do exactly?
Well, it's something we've been doing probably for, 5 or 6, 7 years. And so, this is when we do start our stores and just making them magnificent that everybody continues to love to come. Mm-hmm. And we'll take a Christmas tree and decorate that as fall. And so really it's our fall tree. And so with that, a lot of natural components, it might be from pumpkins to gourds to owls and burlap and different pieces like that. But then also the fall ribbon. And I love putting the little different signs in it. Or if you got a little extra witch laying around, you don't know what to do with her, you add her into the tree. And it's just kind of a fun new way thing to do. And then once Halloween is over, just take the witch out or the ghost or that old black cat. And now it becomes your tree for Thanksgiving. And then try to coordinate your table pieces that would go along with that, or mantles are a wonderful way to do that same thought. I have a couple mantles in my home and they're really a lot of fun to decorate for this different seasons, but it is a little bit of work. Mm-hmm. So once you do that, if you decide, then you can kind of change that around and you're not really taking it all down and your investment is used throughout 3 months and people really will comment on it and it makes us happy and then make some cookies.
I like it. I'm all in when you said cookies.
We've had donuts today and cookies. This is right up my alley. This has been a great show.
You can't beat it.
But going back to what Karen just said, I always talk about the outside and how much, even like night lighting, enjoy pulling up your house. I'm a guy and not all guys decorate well.
I'm glad you are.
I'm being general and I know I'm being stereotypical and we might get a few phone calls for that, but I'm there. I know. I apologize if I offended anyone.
You're good.
But I'm speaking for myself. My wife does a great job and I love when the house gets decorated for fall, and then it changes in the season. And I enjoy being in the house when it's done that way. And, you don't always think about that as a guy sometimes. Those are the parts that
I agree with you,
and I love it. So I think it's great, and it really leads
that's
to what
why
you're talking
we need,
about.
That's why we need our wives and people like Karen Sackstetter from Sackstetter's Interiors. So hold on to that thought. We're going to take another quick break. If you have a call, give us a shout here at 749. If you have a question, give us a shout at 749-B105. I'm Tony Wirth with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And we've had a fun-filled morning thus far. And our special guest, Karen Sackstetter, is here with us from Sackstetter's Interiors. And we've been talking a little bit about decorating inside and somewhat some of the outside areas, too, our window boxes and so forth we're going to talk about. And we were talking about putting some things on our Facebook page. You didn't mention that. And tell us a little bit about your Facebook page, Karen.
We have a great Facebook page. We have, I don't know, a couple thousand followers. And I would love to invite anyone to look at it because it does, you know, I'm sitting here talking about fall and different ideas. But when you go to our Facebook page, you can kind of see more things. We take some shots from inside of our store and in and around the house. You guys have been out and
taking some different pictures. I can attest, your places are... are beautiful. Your locations, if you can't get any interior decorating designs or ideas, then you don't need to design anything inside. I mean, you have wonderful displays at your place. You really do.
Well, you know, we work really hard at it. Sometimes it's hard to go home and do that at your own home because by then we're just kind of all...
You're ready
now.
To relax.
Yeah, we're hungry.
We're like the painter whose house needs to be painted, is
right.
What you're saying?
Yeah. You know, and but yes, I mean, look at the Facebook page. I mean, In and Around the House, he has a wonderful Facebook page. I think like Bob said, one of the things, there's all kinds of big box stores. I mean, we're all guilty of it. We think we want to go to those. But if you can start a relationship with your local gardener, garden store, landscaper, and Sackstetter's Interiors, I mean, it all makes a lot of sense. I mean, because I had a customer in my store yesterday. Her name's Claire. She's from Reverend Delhi. And she has been in my store for 28 years. And I haven't seen her probably for 10 at least. But, you know, you just don't forget faces.
You do not. And I agree with you. Supporting local businesses, all local businesses, is so important. On average, 67 cents of every dollar spent stays in the local economy. And local businesses like ours, they are the cornerstone of our communities, and we need to support our local businesses and keep them in place so they're there tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's a whole other way to look at this, and I know from our business we look at it, but from an interior perspective, because we just repainted the downstairs. And honestly, I've painted many walls where I've done it wrong. And it gets expensive when you start going to buy quality paint, brushes, rollers, and then you take your time into consideration. So going to somebody who is an expert like you on the interior, not only are you going to get it done right the first time, so you're going to save a lot of time, but you're going to save a lot of money, too.
Oh, absolutely. Who wants... I mean, I don't really want to paint either. I mean, it was something I did when I was younger, but now I'm over it. So I'd rather just pay someone to do it. But having an interior decorator, designer, Sackstetter's, we have a whole design consultation to where we come out to your home. We might be helping you with paint, window treatments, furniture placement, or accessories, or we do a huge, huge, huge holiday decorating service. And it's not expensive. I mean, we're a retail store. I have to compete with big box stores, so my prices do compete with that, but we just have that little extra added personal touch. I'm never going away until God decides it's time.
Yeah. Here, you know, and not only do you do residential, also commercial stuff, you know, touch base on that a little bit.
The Moorline House, right. We decorated for Christmas, GE Aviation, the Learning Center, do people's homes. We just were asked to, down next to Music Hall, the new building, my mind's at a blank, we're going to help them with Christmas. And so assisted living, I mean, just so many different things because, you know, not everybody has the time or the staff to do that. So we work along with the tree that you already have, or if you need a new tree, we're able to help you. Or Jackson Forest has some beautiful trees. And so the pre-lit trees are great. But, you know, if you can't afford a new tree, we can come in and help decorate it all up. And it just looks great. Or stop in and we will show you and you can see how we do it.
Well, sometimes just the one thing. You just need one more thing to turn the room into an unbelievable space, you know, and that's where somebody like you, the expert, you know, and you talked about knowing your customers. the more you get to know them, the better job you're even going to do for them. So you can do even more to make their house inside just be magical.
You know, I'll go to people's homes. They're like, hey, I have a couple I'm supposed to go to today. Hey, Karen, will you come over? Sure. What time? 1 o'clock. Okay, I'm going to spend about an hour at your home. Why don't you make like a little list of what you're thinking, and then we'll discuss that as soon as I come in. And then why don't you fix me a glass of iced tea, and then we'll just kind of talk about it. And, you know, it's kind of fun, and it really is fun. It's not intimidating. I think people feel that it might be, but it truly isn't. And it's no different than when you go shopping and you want to buy new clothing, especially for a girl, and it's on that mannequin. It's like, wow, that looks great. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm trying to do, is to help you with your home. I'm not trying to oversell you. I'm use the pieces that you have and then want to add to that.
We spend a lot of time in our homes, and why not make it that haven? You know, when we leave work and we're exhausted, like you were saying a moment ago, you know, our home is our haven, and that's where we relax. So why not have that nice atmosphere, that nice feeling, and set the mode, set the, you know, set.
And have something comfortable to sit in.
Yes, I agree.
If it's your chair, your sofa. I just brought home a new sofa, and it's so nice. It has one of those chase on the end, and like a sectional, and it's just great, except, you know, it does put you to sleep.
Well, all of us have too much stress in our life. We have too much going on. We can't get our fingers off our phones. You know, we all spend too much time doing things probably we shouldn't even be doing, or stressing about work, you know, and just going inside, because for us, it's the outside creating that for people, and for you, it's inside and out. And, you know, if you have that, and you come home, and you get to leave work at work and relax, you're going to be healthier, happier, and it's going to be better for you all the way around.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of great decorating ideas that you can use. I mean, as far as hues of color, going back to that, it's still a lot of the grays that are still driven into the marketplace, mm-hmm. because it's all by the different marketing ads that from the paint companies to the furniture companies to the fabrics and to our clothing. So gray tones are not going away. Still lots of hints of blues, from royal blue to a lighter blue, a smoky blue. So Kentucky should love that. And
you just do
Kentucky home.
Not all of us.
you just hit the nail on the head. I'm starting to see in next year's catalogs for glazed pottery a lot of the gray tones. So it's not going away.
Yeah, gray is here to stay for a while, I think. And then, again, it's with your color wheel. There'll be different hints off of that.
Good old color wheel. Keep that in mind. We're going to take a quick break. Give us a call here at B105, in and around the house, 749-B105, with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up and joining us, welcome. And our special guest, Karen Sackstetter, has been with us this morning. We've been talking about all kinds of things on the inside when it comes to fall decorations and going into the holiday season as well. And before we went into the break, I don't know how the good old color wheel came up as a topic, but I remember that from 7th grade art class with Miss Nordheim, bless her heart, who is no longer with us, from Holmes High School from years ago. But we were talking paint in the break, and that is so important when we talk about paint and painting indoors. And like you, Karen, I am a Sherwin-Williams fan.
I like their colors. I feel like they have a lot of softness to them. If there's another, all these companies will kind of copy each other. It's the line that our decorators and our Sackstetter's mm-hmm. interiors are used to using. It's just they have different qualities of paint that you can pick. But as Bob was saying, you know, you need to kind of come up with the right idea. Otherwise, you waste your money. And of which color that you seem to like. When you're doing a room, if you need an accent wall color, that's usually a little bit deeper tone. And then your other three walls are a lighter tone of color. So typically, how like on the paint strip, they might be five different colors along that paint strip. When you're, if you want to stay within the same hues, you can work off of that. You just might if you pick the second one, then you would go to the fifth one.
Gotcha.
You want to kind of mix that up a little bit, not the one right next to it or the fourth one, depending upon, you know, which your lighting of your room.
What about if you're not going to stay in those monochrome or those tones of mm-hmm. colors, is it safe to switch up a different color altogether?
Oh, yeah. You know, if you want that accent wall, if you have a lighter gray on the outside and you want something a little bit deeper mm-hmm. of a blue or a smoky blue along with that, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But when you do that, then now you're going to have to make sure that you're also using that in other spaces of your room. If it's from your artwork, it's the pillows on your sofa, whatever that those different things are, or the candles on your table.
Got it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you said something once before, and I never thought of this, nor have I done it, actually. Like, where the big, massive TV is that all of us guys love so much, you say, paint that wall black.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially in a lower level or in a family room area, if that can blend in with the other decor that you have.
Got it.
What happens is these TVs, I mean, men, of course, love the biggest one out there.
Absolutely.
And it becomes our focal point. If it's just out there hanging around or sitting on a beautiful display cabinet, we saw a lot of those from Hooker Furniture. If that wall, if it just shows up so much, you might want to paint it, maybe not even necessarily black, but there's some deep charcoals, something that it has an opportunity to blend into that wall.
Where it's not
rather
noticeable.
Than yeah, like you don't put your black on your white. You know, I mean, it looks great in your clothing and different things, but that black TV, you want it to somewhat blend in. So that's where back in the day, there was a lot of armoires that they would be putting those in. But now those are very difficult to find because the TVs have become so big.
Do you think the armoire will come back? Or has it gone away?
Well, you know, for the size of the televisions that are so popular, it would have to be one big armoire.
One big armoire, like a whole wall.
Yeah,
wall
and then you got to find some big boys to carry that in.
That's right, I like it.
So therefore, you know, it depends upon the TV size. Probably not right away. What they're doing now is if you don't want to hang your TV on the wall, which I kind of like sitting them on something more myself.
Don't say that.
Oh, you like hanging them.
No, if Tina's listening, I'm already hearing it. We need to move it down, or it needs to sit on the...
You know, it does become, you know, your level, your horizon, and, you know, sometimes when they're up so high, you might be sitting in your chair, and you're getting kind of a kink in your...
You're not helping me.
And so you just have to give that some thought before you place that in your room. So there's these beautiful cabinets, and that's called a credenza, and it's a multi-purpose. It can... Your large television can sit on that on a stand, and then since it's a closed cabinet, there's other things that you can put inside that cabinet. If it's from DVDs, or blankets that you just want to be cozy since it's turned into, this is the cozy time of year.
Snuggle up time.
Stews,
chilies.
Yeah, get cozy.
I like it.
So anyway, so as far as your television and your paint colors, all those different things, paint colors aren't going to go away. TVs, of course, aren't going to go away. And just figuring out how to decorate with all those things.
You know, most importantly, too, because Bob, you brought up a great topic when we were in a break. It's like, what does that color look like on a wall with natural light and artificial light?
Yeah.
And you sell a lot of lamps and different type of lighting at Saks Stetter.
Lighting is very important. I mean, I don't want to be in the dark. Neither do you guys. So with lighting, with the lamps, you know, if you're placing lighting in a room, you try to place that in a triangle effect. You don't want all your light to the left of the room or the right of the room. So if you do that in a triangle, it just opens up all your viewing of your room. And, you know, once we buy our homes or our spaces, we want to see all of that.
Right.
And so if you don't light up a certain side, you're just not even paying attention. But as far as painting, depending on the windows, and if you're north, south, east, or west, when this beautiful sunshine does come in, it can change your paint color.
It does. It does. We did it this summer. We painted the house, but we picked four colors, and we put them on four different walls in block of four. So each color was in a little block on each wall, and every single wall looked different, even though they were the same color. I had people come in that were friends of mine and pick it, and they couldn't tell which ones were the same colors because it looked different of the lighting.
Interesting. Keep that thought in mind. We got to take another quick break. Give us a call here at 749-B105. You're with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And our special guest is Karen Sackstetter with us from Sackstetter's Interiors. Getting a lot of great ideas. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. And we're having a lot of fun this morning. And as always with Karen Sackstetter, you just bring in this burst of energy and all these interior design decorating ideas. I love it. And give us a little bit of your contact information before we go a little further here and sum up the show.
Sure. It's Sackstetter's Interiors, Karen Sackstetter, and we are at the Brookville, Indiana exit off of I-74 West. It's 11,000 square feet of so much stuff. You got to get out there and see it. And then also on Montgomery Road by Carlo and Johnny's, and it's 3,200 square feet, and I use every inch to show you as much as I can.
Beautiful stuff. Check it out on our Facebook page and your own Facebook page at Sackstetter's Interiors.
The Facebook page looks great. John, you just do a great job taking all those pictures.
Mr. 859.
That's
his nickname. We nicknamed him that last year.
That's awesome. Yes.
859.
Did a great job. The only thing I really wished I would have had time, I have these two little stinky basset hound dogs, Jack and Wilford, and I like to decorate them up.
Put their little cozy sweater on these guys?
Yeah, you know, you can just decorate them up for different times of the year. They won't wear earmuffs. I've tried, but their ears are just way too long. But, you know, if you want to put a little scarf around, you know, with, you know, like a little boo on it or something like that for Halloween. And then, you know, for the fall, put a turkey leg around their neck.
A turkey?
No, I don't do that. They would go insane. But I think that it's fun to decorate your animals. So, you know, maybe that could be something that people could show us on Facebook or so.
That would be hilarious.
Hilarious. Sure.
You know, people love their pets. There's no doubt about it. And now, are these like guard dogs that you're decorating up and
oh, yeah. They're pain in the butt. Yeah. Stinky dogs. So, you know, if you're a basset hound lover, you like stinky dogs. But do you have a dog?
No.
Tony? Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my goodness.
Do I need a dog? Do I look like I need a dog?
I think you should. You share the love. You share that love.
What kind of dog would you see me owning? I mean, you know me a little bit. What kind of dog do you think would be best suit me? And don't say a chihuahua.
I don't know. Let's see. Let me think. Like a hound dog. There's nothing like a hound dog. They really do love you. I'm a mutt.
My dad would call them Sooners. I was like a little youngster. Well, Dad, what's a Sooner? Well, Tony, the sooner they come, the sooner they want to stay.
That's so funny.
Thought, yeah.
How about you, Bob? Do you have any animals?
We have three Maltipoos. Long story. Don't have time to get into why we have three, but maybe for another show. But yes, can't live without them. They're ornery as ever, and I think they're addicted to Moe's, the restaurant Moe's, because every time I bring it in, it's like candy for these dogs. They smell it, they know it, and they have personalities. And I'm sure your dogs, when you dress them up, they probably know they're dressed up.
Well, I think everybody should just give that a little thought. You don't have to dress them up a lot. I don't do that. They won't keep it on. But, you know, I have one basset hound. We have a great picture with him with sunglasses on. And he likes to go boating and all those different things. So, you know, dress your dogs up for the holidays.
Don't forget your cats.
Your
There's a lot of cat lovers out there. And you know, we've got to definitely mention them as well.
We have a greenhouse cat.
Yes, I have a cat.
Yeah.
It just kind of showed up, one of those, and it's been there for about 4 or 5 years. He only has a half a tail, but it's a nice cat. But, you know, so anyway, decorating is for the whole family and your whole home and for the season. And the jingle bells and the little pumpkins and the boo. And trick or treat.
And we're under 11 weeks to Christmas now, aren't we? Something like that?
I don't even know.
I know I'm pushing it ahead, but it's coming. But
my
inner Clark Griswold is already thinking.
There you go.
You know, I'm already thinking about that. I can't help it. 25,000 sparkling lights. There's nothing better.
This is the time of year. I mean, a beautiful day today with all your landscaping, clean it all up. You know, your windows, get those little lights out and maybe on your deck area or your little gazebo area and kind of enjoy this evening. And have some apple cider. I just bought some.
Oh, love cider.
And, you know, so, you know, you decorate your home for just everyone to come over and enjoy it.
You know, and even the outside, too. I don't want to forget about the fire pits and family and friends getting together. And there's some really cool fire pits. And you weren't there at the Airette show, but there was a different design I've never seen before. We bought some for next season. They're steel fire pits, heavy gauged, and they also have like a dome effect to them that are like these cutout leaf patterns.
Oh, nice.
Really, really cool. Interesting, and a totally different spin on the outdoor fire pits that you can move around or, you know, keep on the driveway or somewhere down in the yard.
And we do a bunch of those. We love to do that. Right. I mean, it's a great place for the family to spend time, for you to spend time with friends, get your cider out, have a fire, some s'mores. I mean, that's the part that we all need more of. And we do a lot of it. And we do the natural campfire styles, even with boulder walls and flagstones with some grass. I mean, we've been doing a lot of those because they're natural and they're pretty and they're easy to maintain.
And it's calming. It's calming, for sure. But yeah, so let's all decorate this weekend. And if you haven't bought a mum yet or some cute little pumpkins, let's all start. And because it's beautiful out.
And most importantly, too, it's a big weekend for couples. It's Sweetest Day weekend.
Oh, geez.
Right? So don't forget
that. Well, go buy your sweetest
a pumpkin, a floral arrangement. Take her out to dinner or him out to dinner. So don't forget it's Sweetest Day. Support your local businesses. If you're looking to pick up a Sweetest Day gift, your local florist as well.
Absolutely. Or stop at Sackstetter's.
They're even better.
Sackstetter.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Give us your information real quick, your website information and contacts.
Sackstetter's Interiors, Karen Sackstetter, the Brookville, Indiana exit off of 74, and also in Montgomery on Montgomery Road, real close to Carlos and Johnny's. And just check out our Facebook page, In and Around the House. There's some great photos just to entice you to decorate your home for
perfect. And Bob, thank you for joining us, and Bob will be here next week to fill in for Ernie as well. And we're going to talk about next week branches, bark, and berries. And my friend Andrea D published a great little article in the Kentucky Gardening Magazine, and we'll get in touch with her, and we'll bring some fun things to the table from right out of the garden.
Absolutely, and we want to hear from you guys out there. If there's some fun things going on or something you need to talk about, you know, let us know. So, I mean, there's a lot of important gardening things going on, and you know, we want to make sure we get you the right information. And it's always been fun. I appreciate you having me on the show. And I always appreciate Karen. And it seems like every time I'm in, Karen's in as well, which is a blast. And I love it. And I get to see her more than just at the Home and Garden Show. And, you know, just thankful for everything. And I just want everybody to have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy the sunshine. And get out there and do some gardening.
Perfect. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.